Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. It's Monday. Here we go again. This is a crazy adventure we're on here. There is so much happening right now. Action Radio, you know, I keep saying this, but we're getting closer and closer to exploding on the national scene. We've got some things in the works. We've got some major contacts. You know, I was on with Emerald Robinson recently on Lindell TV. And so we're hoping to get our bills to Mike Lindell, hoping to get him to Donald Trump. I'm serious about this. I'm not just, you know, saying this, but these are people that are seriously interested in what we're doing. And so the ideas are winning. You know, the ideas, the two biggest bills that are crashing through right now, and John Collins tweeting them worldwide, people are responding to this, are the vaccine product liability bill and our bill on Section 230 to take away big tech censorship, both of which are fairly short. The vaccine bill's a little longer because it does more. Big tech was easy to fix. I stopped big tech censorship in three lines. So that one wasn't a problem. It takes a little bit more to understand that. Well, no, that's not true. They both take a little bit to understand because I have some legislative history and background in there. But the vaccine product liability bill, and both of these are in our website, writeyourlaws.com. So that's WRITEYOURLAWS, writeyourlaws.com. And so what you want to do is you go there, and you'll see the homepage, which will give you all kinds of descriptive stuff for how to write a bill, how the site works. It's really great information. The second thing you'll see, if you look up top at the menu bar next to the homepage, is the word legislation. And that's where the works are. Now, this page is still under construction because our webmaster, you know, my friend, Eric Cawley, died, was killed in the hospitals like so many people with ventilators and bad procedures and lies and all kinds of things. So Eric is not with us anymore, but the website he created is. Still needs work, but what he created, you know, has put us on a path. I mean, I credit Eric with everything we're able to do in terms of legislation because he made possible the ability of anybody to write a bill and follow it through the legislative process and you know, be signed by the president, well, the real one, not the resident, the occupant of the White House right now. And so Eric gets the credit. I mean, I came up with the idea. I mean, it's certainly my idea because he didn't think of that. But this is where everything becomes a team. Everything becomes a cooperative effort. So the idea is nothing without the person that can implement it. And so I had the idea. It's actually kind of a funny story. I'm waiting for Jonathan to call in, and we're going to talk about some legal stuff. He does not have a lot of time this morning, so he'll be with us for a short time. But I'll take whatever. Yeah, I'll take whatever I can get. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I don't care. He's a busy guy. Anyway, so with Eric, when we initially started talking, I don't even know how I met him. People come to me, friends of friends, contacts, you know, emails, stuff I see on Facebook. It's like this. There's so many folks. It's this never-ending stream. Anyway, so Eric, we're talking first time. He says, "You want me to do what?" So I want to have a bill where I want to have a website where people can post a law, and then we can email and send it to all of Congress and all of media, and in fact, worldwide. He says, "You want to do what?" I don't know if we can do that. He says, "Yeah, you can do it." Okay. Well, he comes back to me a few weeks later and says, yeah, we can do it. So Eric builds his website for us, writeyourlaws.com. And I had a website previously, but it was nowhere near as good. So what he built was absolute genius. And so I credit Eric with every build that we're able to do. And that's what happens. And so he built this. And like I say, he's not with us anymore. You know, I know he's watching down at us going, yeah, Greg, keep going. Thanks. Appreciate the help. You know, so and I appreciate his help. So that's what we're able to do. And so these two bills, vaccine product liability and fixing big tech censorship by correcting Section 230, I've been over them. These are going to be big. They're going to be national news. They're going to be polled, you know, with the politicians. We've got major folks, like I say, at Lindell TV, Emerald Robinson. We've got other people working on this, publicizing, tweeting, getting them out there. It's only a matter of time now before these things break nationally. And when they do, I don't know what's going to happen. Like I say, we're in uncharted territory here. We are pioneers. One of those pioneers who wrote a brilliant bill on COVID business and other liquidity, you know, when the COVID money runs out, when the $5.2 trillion runs out, you know, this is where Jonathan comes in. So he's written a brilliant bill too. So we got a lot of great folks here. Now, I know you got limited time, Jonathan, so just feel free. Tell me what's on your mind, and let's get started with anything that you can think of. And when you have to go, just, you know, let me know. I've got plenty of material to cover our,
all right,
our
well,
vast,
I,
Action Radio Empire today. Sir.
You, it's been in the news that, Stuart Rhodes, fired his attorneys for the Oath Keepers, January 6th case coming up in 2 weeks. He did so strongly hoping that the government would, postpone the trial. This judge is hell-bent on having the trial before the election, at least the way Stuart interprets it. And so he has denied multiple requests. I've said before that I think where conservatives have kept losing these battles is that we cannot imagine that the system could be as rotted as it actually is. We're always 2, 3, or 10 steps behind because our estimation of how awful our everything is in our country really is. Our enemies have been busily trying to undermine the country for 130 years, and so
we're behind the curve, but we're catching up. We're working on it.
Well, I hope so, but that's why I say it, is that people need to realize that however bad you think things are, they're 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And so we have been shooting, I'm not a hunter really, but the analogy that comes to mind is like we're shooting, behind the flock of quails and consistently missing because – we're not gauging what the real problems are. Even when I was in the Department of Education in the Reagan administration, and then the Bush administration, I noticed that, many of Reagan's reforms did not work because he underestimated just how bad the system was, and I could go into that, but this is just in general. So we're dealing with real serious problems here. The FBI, just to aside on where we are as a nation, is on January 6, 2021, an estimated 10,000 demonstrators surrounded the Capitol. Most of them just elderly people standing there gawking and maybe holding a sign.
The Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, as we call it.
and then we had that. So, according to government statistics, 225 people have been charged with, again, you want to know, one of the things that I think needs to happen, getting off of Jerry Spence's meanderings on the Larry King show decades ago. He said that the jury, juries are looking for who is the truth teller, which is a good way for citizens to look at their politicians, their candidates, their government, everything. Is like, who is trying to pull the wool over your eyes? And go for, look at it that way. So the government has issued these statistics that have these broad categories of things that don't go together, like the Sesame Street song, "One of These Things Does Not Belong." So they've charged 225 people with a broad lump of unrelated categories, including violence. Now, why would an honest FBI and Department of Justice combine unrelated things in putting out a press release? If you're going to try to say that some people were violent, some people beat on police, wouldn't you make a list of exactly those people? But so we have 75 people were charged with like interfering with or hindering or beating, assaulting. Mm-hmm. Why would you report those statistics, those three different categories as one number? So somewhere out of 75 people, some of them assaulted police, but we don't know how many of them just, looked cross-eyed at a police officer and charged with hindering. Or it's like, what are you doing? I've seen resisting arrest cases in Virginia criminal law, where it basically comes down to you didn't help the police arrest you.
You asked for a search warrant or something like that? You mentioned your constitutional rights.
Right, well,
I mean, that would be hindering.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that when the cops try to arrest you, mm-hmm. you know, you can't run or fight them or beat them or something like that. But they're the ones doing the arresting. You don't have to arrest yourself.
Yep.
And so, we are dealt, you know, my mother, I think probably 70 years ago, or mm-hmm. in the 70s, excuse me, started proclaiming America land of lies. And she loved this country. She was a patriot. She was being, so it bothered me to hear her say that. But the more I thought about it, it's like we have become a society that is plagued with just rampant lying and mm-hmm. word games. So anyway, there's 225 out of 10,000 that the demonstrations say there did various different things, including possibly some violence, and 75, you know, having, you know, assaulting police or having with them a deadly weapon. Now that notice the two different, you know, you're invited to think that they assaulted the police with a deadly weapon. That's not what it says. It says either they assaulted the police or they had on them a deadly weapon. And of course, anything is a deadly weapon.
This is the leftist tactic.
A deadly weapon is, huh?
Yeah. Well, this is a leftist tactic. They do this all the time. They'll mention four or five completely unrelated facts, and they figure that the preponderance of things that they mention, even if they're not facts, you know, should convince you. They'll throw. I've seen this happen time and time again in arguments. They'll throw out like four or five different things, you know, that are either related or not, even related to each other, and that's supposed to convince you because they mentioned four or five things that what they're saying is true and is related to the topic that they're trying to argue for, and neither of those are correct, you know. But just because they throw out a bunch of things doesn't mean that that's an argument.
Like, well, right. So the Viking guy, I see no reason to call him a Jewish supporter or a shaman. But he's dressed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's dressed for a bad Halloween party, you know. He's got a costume on as a Viking that would make him, you know, have a, you know, he wouldn't win any costume contest for Halloween with that costume. And they counted his hat with mm-hmm. His fake Viking hat with two mm-hmm. horns on the top. Each of those horns is a deadly weapon when they sent him.
Wait a minute. Isn't that cultural appropriation from Native Americans? That looks more Native American than it looks
Well, maybe
Viking.
That's why he got 41 months is for cultural appropriation.
Yeah, there we go.
but the idea, I mean, he basically didn't do anything mm-hmm. except that he made the offense of becoming noted in the media.
Mm.
So he had to go.
Right.
He was made through no efforts of his own except his gaudy outfit. And crowing around, the media made him a symbol, mm-hmm. and therefore he had to be destroyed. And he had this toy spear as part of his uniform, so that's a deadly weapon. Now, I think that if our police in the District of Columbia, remember the U.S. Capitol Police and the Washington D.C. Metropolitan Police acted very, very differently. You know, the U.S.
That's
Capitol
true.
Police are used to welcoming. They're like the security guards at Disney World. They're used to welcoming people, tours of school children, visitors. I've gone up into the Capitol just to have lunch, just for the hell of it, gone in there to pass out press releases. You know, mm-hmm. the idea that this is the missile base is ridiculous. It's a probably the most public government building in the world. And, you know, people look at it as a museum. It is in part a museum. It's intended to be. And, I mean, we
oh,
have
I
our
the
documents
Capitol.
On display.
Yeah, I was there for internship.
Yeah.
I
we have
was
our documents
I was there
on display.
Yeah, we used to steal food from the – all the interns would go to the receptions at night and raid all the food trays because we were poor. That's how I survived in Washington. I wasn't making any money. You know, so the congressional interns. I was with the Consumer Federation of America back during my brief liberal days. And we used to – I lived on finger sandwiches. That's how I survived.
Yeah, and I used to go in the late 80s I used to go to a prayer breakfast, quiet, Bible study thing.
Okay.
In the Capitol building itself, and they say over and over again that the Capitol is, quote, is secured 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If somebody is playing games with words, do you trust them? You know, Walmart is secured 24 hours a day. The National Air and Space Museum, which moved out to near Dulles Airport, it used to be downtown.
It's secured
24 hours.
I love that museum. Yeah. I went there when they first had the movie To Fly. You know, the big documentary, the initial, the very first. This is back, I think, late 70s. Or was it early? No, I think it was late 70s I was there. When they had the first documentary, To Fly, they opened up the Air and Space Museum. You had Apollo 11. You had, all the landing module. You had, I think, I don't know what they had. They had all this cool stuff hanging from the ceiling. I was paradise for me. And then they moved it to Dulles. What, so they could put bigger airplanes there? Well, they got like B-52s and things out there now or what?
Yeah, so I think before the pandemic and everything, the launch of chemical or biological warfare by China before China declared war on the United States by its biological weapons program. There were like 4.5 million visitors to the National Air and Space Museum.
Hmm.
But they do have security guards. I mean, they don't really want someone walking off with, the Apollo space capsule.
part of it.
And happened.
Rocks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why there's a fence around Plymouth Rock, because people used to be chipping off a piece of it. and similar things. And so a government that will tell you that if try to make you think that the Capitol is closed to the public when we know it's not. It's like George Orwell. There are five, you're looking at four lights and they want you to say there are five lights. Because once they get you to believe what you know to be false, they own your mind. You're a mind slave.
The rest is easy.
So again, they're claiming that the Capitol is secured 24 hours a day, which it is not. There were six demonstration permits. They say, well, people entered a restricted area. Well, how restricted is it when you issued six demonstration permits from the U.S. Capitol Police? Not really.
Yeah, they took down the signs. They took down all the restricted area signs.
Right.
So nobody knew where the restricted areas were.
They will show a map of the Capitol building with a line around it. Small problem. Nobody saw that map. The map was not posted. These are people who appropriated trillions of dollars of infrastructure. They couldn't afford some signs, with trillions of dollars that they voted for.
It gets back to the real coup. And this is where I can't wait to get on some of these bigger shows. Like I say, I was on with Emerald Robinson. I want to get on hopefully with Steve Bannon and some of these other folks, Brandon House again on Lindell TV and some of these bigger newscasts. There's some things in the works I'll tell you about in a bit. But the thing is, these are the questions I want to ask. I mean, no one's asking what happened under the Capitol. So this is, we know the top was a distraction.
Well, there's someone, Greg.
Well, true. But But this is the question I've always had, is you got 7 hours that are missing from the congressional record where Congress was meeting. I think that's illegal, isn't it? And what's
legal?
Well, I don't know if it's illegal, but the congressional record documents everything that Congress does, everything everybody says, the motions, anytime they meet, they even if they don't say what they did, they at least say when they met and when they stopped meeting. Well, there's a gap.
This is a very good question. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Well, I've checked.
Yeah,
there's nothing there to that. Yeah.
But I do know that under Virginia state law, that would be a violation of the Meetings Act. The public meetings law, and I think that has been litigated. People have screamed about it. That is not just a crazy idea. So I wonder what that's like, because obviously members of Congress can talk to each other, just as in Virginia state law, members of their General Assembly or public bodies can talk to each other. But once it's more than two people talking to each other, then it has to comply with the public meetings laws, including keeping records and things. So it would be pretty sad if our federal government is substandard compared to, you know, Virginia. You know, Virginia state law, Virginia for most of its existence have tried to be minimalist, originalist, less is more kind of attitude. You know, if you tell Virginia people, at least before the North Governor Northam, you know, if you tell them, like, you guys are really out of date, they go, oh, thank you. You know, they want to be original. They want to be original old England. You know, they want to be as close. You know, if you tell Virginia that California is doing something, they'll do the opposite.
Are they going to get powdered wigs? They need powdered wigs for the real effect.
They've graduated from powdered wigs to bow ties. You must have a bow tie to be in Virginia politics. In Richmond, not necessarily campaigning on the campaign trail, but to be in the Richmond government political circles, you know, they have moved from wigs to grudgingly.
But the guys who wear bow ties look like George Will and Jeffrey Tucker. Nothing is anything wrong with those guys, but just they'll have that same look. They got the same glasses, same haircut, you know, same bow tie. Mm-hmm. It's like a clone. It's hysterical. I think, though, just to be honest, and in my recollection, as accurate as I can be, I think they either say they suspend or they adjourn. I'm not sure which, but they do mention the time stop, and they mention the time that they come back.
That's kind of interesting. I had one of the lawyers lecture me to use the word recess.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean in a bad way, but she was just very strong about the point that the Congress recessed. It did not adjourn. It did not suspend. The correct technical category is it recessed. And therefore, if they then resumed meeting in the Longworth cafeteria or somewhere, you know, if they had enough people to start making it more than private conversations, then the recess was over.
Yeah. Well, see, that's my contention, too. So I don't know exactly what they said, but I know they met because they were all under the Capitol. You know, both the House and the Senate were meeting. And maybe they're not all in the same room, but they were all together, you know, within the same few rooms. We know they met. We know they talked. And we know they did stuff because – and here's how we know this. Because a bunch of the folks that went down who promised to vote against Brandon and honor the Trump electors came back and had reversed during the course of that time.
Right.
So the fact that they reversed is evidence that they conducted business. That either somebody talked to them or they talked to somebody or they talked to themselves. So whatever they did, they changed their minds under the Capitol. And that's the coup. That's the coup right there. And there's the proof of the coup is that all – and you look at the statements. Kelly Loeffler is the classic, right? Kelly Loeffler went before January 6th, said, I'm going to vote against Brandon. I'm going to challenge it. We're going to have the state election. She's in Georgia. We're going to do a Georgia challenge. I'll be the senator that challenges it. Yada, yada, yada. Goes under the Capitol. Comes back up. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so scared. For the good of the country, we have to vote Brandon in. And she totally changed her mind. Came up whimpering. Well, how did that happen? Okay.
Well,
somebody got to her. Something changed, and she's only one of the people. But there's a lot more.
Right, and over and over again, although the legal context and the laws that apply are different, but there's still, to my mind, maybe I'm just oversimplifying, but there's this continuing theme that if there were a good explanation, they would have told us.
That's BS. If they're a good explanation, I wouldn't be asking questions because I have a good explanation.
No, if the explanation were good.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
If the explanation of what happened made them look good.
Right.
Or were valid, they wouldn't be – members of Congress have bellyached and go, oh, I'm whining, I'm so bad. I think, you know, we were scared and everything like this, but they haven't actually answered your question. What did they do?
Yep.
The fact that there's complete silence, I think, tells you that it was bad.
Mm-hmm. I think it was terrible. I think it was arm twisting. I think Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and maybe even Kamala Harris was down there. Brandon was probably, you know, napping. But whatever happens under the Capitol, because they're all there. All the leaders were there. The whole deep state was there. And who's to say they didn't bring in Brandon and Clapper and Comey and whoever else from the intelligence community? You know, I don't know who else is under there. We haven't even accounted for the people under there. We don't even know if there are more people than Congress under there. There could have been the entire secret government under there for all we know. We don't know because nobody's talking and it's not in the record. But that is the coup. I'm convinced of it. I'm absolutely convinced that the coup took place under the Capitol with Trump supporters on top as cover. That's the coup. That's how I explain it.
Well,
and no one's contradicting
me. My rambling points about Virginia are that if the Virginia state government has these kinds of laws, it'd be pretty sad if there's nothing at the federal level saying that if you have Congress meet and you know and you don't report it, that's not okay. You have to tell if you have that many people meeting together, you have to tell us what's happening.
You know, you've heard the expression conspicuous by its absence. this is not like conspicuous. This is like fireworks going up. You know, you take a look at it. Say, wait a minute, there's nothing there. And this is when I looked it up about a year or so ago. And I looked it up. I could look it up again. It wouldn't be hard to do. I might just post that. But you look up the congressional record, and there literally is like nothing there. It says they left at this time, they came back at this time, and there's a little space right there, you know, where they should have had a whole lot of details. Hey, let me, if you want to cover more on this, but there's a question I've been meaning to ask you for a long time, if you have, unless you want to cover more on this. So I leave it to you.
I was trying to ask.
Do you want to go on?
Up.
Okay, go ahead.
I was actually trying to veer over into something.
Please do that. Yes, veer.
More
away.
Relevant. Which let me just finish one point. Is that in spite of all this nonsense and God forbid we should have to ever go to war with some of these military people, or some of these police, but. There was no reason for the government to rush this trial of the January 6th people. They had a statute of limitations of five years. And they're clearly not ready. They're still collecting evidence. Last Friday, the FBI raided 50 people's homes about January 6th, which means none of that evidence will be available before trial. They've been doing this continuously.
Why are they still raiding? Why are they still raiding homes? What don't they know?
Because they don't. Well, I mean, my interpretation is because they haven't found anything,
I'm sorry, this is funny. They don't have enough fake evidence for their fake charges, is what you're saying. That's why they raided Trump, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Right.
Let's be blunt.
So
we do that here.
But they really, really believe. They think that if they squeeze these people strong, I've said this before, hard enough. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to say, okay, we all met at, Trump's New Jersey club every 2 weeks.
We all have Russian cousins. It's our fault, But here's the thing, though.
Right.
What they don't realize, and this is why it's so hard for these FBI and the other terrorists in our government, is they don't realize that they're dealing with honest people. I mean, Trump supporters are basically honest people. And you can't make an honest person admit to something they didn't do. You can make a criminal do it because they want the plea bargain. Oh, yeah, I did that. You know, give me 6 months instead of a murder charge of 20
right.
years. Yeah, I'll admit
to
that.
A,
you know, but they
I think
dealing
that's
with honest
a
people.
Profound point.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. I have my moments.
That's a profound point. When there's this wonderful movie, The Russia House, which is what made me want to go over there is a thing. And there's one point where they're dealing with this publisher and trying to turn him into an operative, an undercover. And the all the spooks are debating. It says, you don't understand. You don't understand that he's a real, he's a regular guy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so used to dealing with people who are scummy and just like you said, it's just like you said, that they
the
can't
rest of
wrap
the government.
Their heads around the fact.
The whole deep state.
Right.
Yeah.
They can't wrap their heads around the fact that what if these guys are innocent? And, you can squeeze them all you want, but there's nothing there.
And they didn't do anything. They're not going to say that they wanted to overthrow the U.S. government because they didn't. They wanted to make it work.
Right.
You know, as I was there taking pictures of, you know, I had my friends and we're taking pictures of statues, you know, and you wanted to say, I did what? Most people are going to say, no, I didn't do that. And they're so willing to do that. It's like the old Danny Kaye movie. Yeah, I forgot what it was, you know, the whatever it was set like several hundred years ago. You know, if I can find one honest man, and he was like the only in the kingdom, I'll be happy. And like Danny Kaye was the only honest man. But or Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
So,
you couldn't bring Mr. Smith because he was his convictions. He was honest. He had a pure heart. You know, you can't. We're not of that world of the deep state where everything's a lie.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it took us 30 minutes to say probably a 5-minute point, but the thing is that with no reason at all to rush this trial except to throw the midterm elections. The Judge Maeda is just adamantly refusing to give these January 6th people more time to get the evidence they need. And the evidence is still being collected, and yet they're going to go to trial while the FBI is still running around collecting more evidence that the defendants won't have access to. It's just absurd. And
what if they're trying to just break the people? They're just trying to keep the people in prison long enough that they'll do anything to get out. They'll admit to anything to get out. Maybe it's just a wear down process. Maybe that's what's really going on, that they know there's no evidence. But so just the process of looking for it, they don't care. They work their 8-hour day. They're going to get their pension. You know, they're being paid a ridiculous amount of money. They get all kinds of health benefits. What do they care how long it takes to gather evidence, real or imagined? They don't even have to gather evidence. The real operation, like I say, everything is deception. Sun Tzu, right? All war is deception. So everything they do is deception. The evidence is irrelevant. The real question is, can they wear these people down? And again, they're still dealing with honest people. They're willing to say, no, I don't want a felony on my record. I didn't do anything. And they're willing to stay in prison because, once again, they're honest people. But they're still trying to wear them down, beat them down, torture them, and everything else. This is a gulag. This is a DC gulag.
Did you know that in the Bible, in the all the parts that nobody wants to read about all the rules, the other detail rules, is that if somebody brings false charges against a judge, we would call today criminal charges, but they had different terminology.
They're more direct.
And it was found out that a witness lied or the complaining person lied, they would be punished with the same punishment that would have fallen on the accused.
Oh, see, that's what I think
so, like,
false accusations for anybody. If you do a false accusation of rape or assault, or if you do a false accusation of, stealing stuff or whatever your false accusation is, if you can prove that you knew it was false and you're making it for political gain or personal gain, you get the punishment of whatever the crime was. Yeah, that should apply across the board, though, for everybody that makes a false accusation. I agree. Back to you.
So anyways, the thing is, that's going on. It's going. I mean, it's going to have to end up in the appeal court. But we're going to trial on the 27th after for no reason whatsoever, artificial and capricious, arbitrary and capricious date with a phony rush on the trial.
It's before the midterms. That's the main thing.
Well, the theory is that they're going to use it to legitimate arresting Trump. Is that when they get a conviction, a phony conviction of, and that's one of the reasons why the prosecution is just like, you know, they're running over the rules, backing up and running over them again. They're just flagrantly violating, you know, because the theory is that they don't care if they're overturned on appeal. They just want to use it as a publicity stunt to make the public accept an indictment of Trump. In public relations.
Well, it's like impeachment. You know, the implication is a certain percentage of people will think he's guilty just because he was impeached. It's like if you're charged with a crime, a certain percentage will think you're guilty. You know, especially if you're a guy and it's a child molestation charge or something like that. Well, he must be guilty, otherwise they wouldn't have charged him. You never get out from under that. You know, I talked to the people at the Innocence Project. We're going to have Michael Volpe on tomorrow talking about that. Tell me about the judge in this case. What is the judge's background? Were they CIA, FBI, military intelligence, or deep state stuff? Are they beholden to people? You know, is he a friend of, I don't know, anybody. But what's his connection?
He is a very. I don't know a lot. I know about him being in front of him. He, like, for example, the chief judge, Beryl Howell, is a raving political activist who will insult things and say intemperate things and just blurt out things that reveal her bias. But Judge Maida is very, very careful, but it's an act because, like, he spent 45 minutes grilling the prosecutor. Because most of these laws these guys are charged with have never been used this way before.
Oh.
I mean, they're stretching laws to apply to things that they don't apply to. Like, obstruction of an official proceeding. It's clearly about out of the Arthur Anderson Enron thing. It's about destroying documents. It's not about, the Kavanaugh, anti-Kavanaugh protesters or anything like that, or when the labor union activists took over the Wisconsin legislature, almost a decade ago. And, those kinds of things, it's never been applied to this before. So he grills the prosecutor and you think, wow, we won that one. He's going to side with us. And then he just totally screws, the defendants 100% on every point. I don't think he's ever decided anything against the government. Some people have said, I haven't seen this, that he was being considered for the Supreme Court. I think it would be hard for him to buck the system. He puts on a very good impression until you really push and point out. For example, one of the things is he gets irate when somebody's making a good point. When the defendants are on a roll and about to, really destroy the government's case, Judge Maida will interrupt and get angry and berate the lawyer and
That's like Chris Wallace in
totally,
the Trump debate. Who would he interrupt his
Trump
and
totally,
start
right.
siding with Biden?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like when your opponent I've never actually seen this, but I'm just trying to explain some things. But this is just an example that is just an explanation. It's not an actual event. But, the idea that one lawyer is making a great point that destroys the other side's case, so the other side knocks the water pitcher over on the table and tries to distract the jury from noticing what the guy is saying that's destroying his case.
Yeah.
That's something that Judge Maida does. He has the other lawyers in the case are domesticated, they're house cats, largely because Maida knows how to get under their skin.
Oh, okay.
And
so they're afraid.
He's intimidated them and scared them.
Right.
Precisely whenever they try to make a good point, he goes off in this phony outrage.
Are these the same lawyers that tried to defend Marjorie Taylor Greene and told her to say, I don't know, I don't recall, rather than say, of course, Trump's the legitimate president. I've been saying it for years, and here's the proof. Are those the same lawyers or the
no,
same type of lawyers?
No, they're not literally. They may have been separated at birth, but they're not literally the same lawyers.
Okay. Well,
they, they. But this is a philosophy. It's a play it safe, don't take any chances philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And it's like everything else. Guidelines. I can't say that laws are made to be broken. That's silly. But
no.
Guidelines
they're made to be
are
used.
Guidelines.
They're made to be used.
But guidelines. Let me say that guidelines are meant. Uh-huh. to be considered, but not always applied in every situation. And so the play, the, in fact, there are things in this case where I think that the lawyers should wait and let the government fall into their own trap. But, in any trial like this, I think there are some things where you keep your mouth shut and you let the prosecutor, step in their own bear trap.
Yeah,
and there are other
absolutely.
Things that you pound and yell and hit them over the head with from day one over and over again. And it depends. But these people, like you say, the Marjorie Taylor Greene lawyer and these people, they don't know the difference. They
okay.
don't know. Now is the this is a time.
Well, why didn't she
to
speak
wait.
Up?
You know, it's like.
She speaks up every other time. Why didn't she speak up in her own trial? Say, well, I want to answer this question this way. You know, why didn't she speak up? Or you think she was too worried about the trial
or
something?
That's a damn good question. It's a damn good question. I mean, because remember, she was a congressman for all of 2 days before January 6, 2021.
Yeah, but the trial
was
like,
to say that,
you know, she was a congressperson for she's been in Congress for a couple of years now.
No, on January 6, 2021, she was sworn in 2 days earlier.
Right.
So to say that she was part of an insurrection for 2 days,
yeah,
is just laughable.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I don't remember that coming
out
of the trial.
And yet, no, it did. Yeah.
Oh, it did. Okay. Okay.
It.
All right.
But again, you wouldn't have missed it if the lawyer was doing, you know, was really doing his job.
Well, no, I mean, I didn't watch
the
whole thing, but I just remember, you know, I focused on the sections where she was. Go ahead.
Apparently, Marjorie Taylor Greene's husband went to vote and was told that he had already voted by mail.
Yep.
And, I mean, a decent lawyer would have said that, would have worked that into every other sentence.
Would have
over
put him on the stand,
over
too.
Over and over.
Put him on the stand. I mean, he's not testifying against his wife, so that's okay. Why didn't you just put him on the stand and say, what happened?
Absolutely.
In fact, I'd have everybody on the stand.
Absolutely.
I would have had all the people that signed affidavits
Absolutely.
In Georgia, you know, in her district, saying, well, tell me about the vote fraud. I mean, why weren't they put on the stand? You know, you and I could have done this trial easily. You know, and I'm not a lawyer. You know, and I could have
right.
I could have helped. That would have been backup or researcher or assistant or, you know, Paul
well,
Drake.
No,
I would be Paul Drake.
We have to have the experienced professionals screw up the trial. They
exactly.
have to be certified you know, very experienced
word, yeah.
house cats.
Yeah, exactly. Well, can I ask you a question? A little different question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. This whole myth of the ongoing investigation, I watched the traitors at the FBI use it, so they didn't have to say how many traitors there were in the FBI. You know, Ted Cruz asked the questions. Some of the other folks have asked questions. Massey, I think, has asked questions. And they all say the same thing. I can't tell you. This is part of an ongoing investigation, or it goes to sources and methods. This, to me, is absolute BS. I almost said the real word, but this is BS, all right? And so they think that this is like a get-out-of-jail-free card. This is like, you can't ask me. As soon as I say ongoing investigation or I say sources and methods, you can't ask. And here's what I think is going on. I really want an explanation on this. If I believe that there were FBI traitors like Ray Epps and other folks that were involved in January 6th, they had to have them out there because they had to get the Trump supporters above ground so they could commit the treason, you know, and the coup underneath. So in order to get them up there, they had to have FBI operatives to get them up there. Now, if you ask, you know, if Ted Cruz asks one of the people in the FBI, well, did you have people up there? If they say yes, they've just admitted to treason and a coup, and now they're guilty. If they say no, then that's perjury, the subject of perjury charges. So the only thing they can say is, I won't answer the question. So to me, saying I won't answer the question is just as bad as saying yes, because they know they don't want the perjury charge and they don't want the treason charge. But they say, well, that goes to sources and methods. I can't answer the question. And they keep saying it. And, of course, none of the geldings, you know, push them on it. But that's what I think is really going on. But there's this myth, and I don't even know where it came from. This is what I'm asking you. Where did it come from where somebody in the government can say, I have an ongoing investigation, or that goes to sources and methods. I don't have to answer you, you know, Mr. and Ms. Congressperson, even though they are bound to answer because they're under congressional oversight. That's the whole purpose of these questions, being asked in an open hearing. That's oversight. They have to answer. And yet they don't. Can you explain?
Well, I think all I can do is say that your explanation is correct. I think they do it because they've learned, you know, they've like children, you know, notice how young children learn how to lie. They see that if there's an explanation, they can get away with it. So they say, oh, you know, if I just say the right words, I'll get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they see that those words work,
mm-hmm.
Then they just use them all the time. It's like, for example, when I was working for Larry Klayman on something, there was a person who blew the whistle on Hillary Clinton on the Clintons, I should say, the president, violating campaign.
Are they still alive? Are they still alive?
They are still alive, but
they're very quiet.
But he was prosecuted. So instead of following up on the tip, they made something up and prosecuted him.
Hmm.
So Larry Klayman went to filed a Freedom of Information Act. And then, of course, they said something like 12 years later that there was still an ongoing investigation, which, of course, there's not for all kinds of reasons, including the statute of limitations has expired. And there's one thing where they withheld the documents on the grounds of some kind of foreign, you know, some kind of foreign connection or foreign policy thing. Now, this is a guy who and I should know the name, who scammed Fidel Castro by selling him a fake, getting
smart.
A contract.
That's dumb.
Well, I mean, you'd think it would make him a hero, but not with the deep state. So they sold him like fake coffee or something for $6 million or didn't deliver the coffee or whatever. Uh-huh. And so that was in the 70s.
Hmm.
So they claim that there's still an investigation going on. And we raised the judge saying, what the hell, you know, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah.
Judge didn't care. They say there's still an investigation or source. I mean, the thing is, if it's sources and methods, sources are probably dead through the passage of time. I mean, there's no sources and methods.
That's a secret. You talk to people, you look things up, you go online, you know, you gather evidence. Exactly. What do you mean methods? What methods don't
exactly
we know?
Exactly my point.
Okay, go ahead.
Exactly right. And the thing is that, you know, and the same thing with the January 6th, they say, oh, we can't tell you this information because it would reveal the security systems for the Capitol. Get in there and you go, I'll bet there's a camera over there. You know, like anybody who's seen a movie knows that, you know, okay, point, you know how the Capitol has tours of school children.
Right.
And so the teacher could say, okay, school kids, tell me where the cameras likely are. Well, there, and there.
And here are the guards.
And
here's
and
the metal detector at the door. And here's the iron bars or steel bars across the door. You know, and there's the guy with the M16 full-auto rifle these days, you know, out front in the camo gear, you know, in an urban environment, so he's easy to see. I mean, what don't we know? You know,
yeah,
what,
well,
I'll
tell you the one thing we don't know. With the incompetent computer people in the government and government contracting, they probably have the worst, oldest, obsolete software you could imagine, systems you can imagine. You know, the average Walmart probably has better security than the U.S. Capitol. like you go into a courtroom and you see these. Yep.
When they open the doors, they say, come on down. Like the Price is Right. I call it the Price is Right
convention. When you go into a courthouse, many courthouses, you'll see these awful old COBOL, you know, these 1970s style computers sitting in the courthouse, you know, in the file room of the courthouse.
Oh my God!
You know, if you ever go in there and you see them, like, oh my God, these are ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a tendency they're called legacy systems, because when you have a legacy system, and it works or it kind of works, you know, you keep them. If you had to start from scratch, you'd buy all the latest, most modern things.
Well, that raises
like
a great point.
Like when I went to Eastern Europe.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Tell me.
No, when I went to Eastern Europe after the Soviet Union collapsed, they had better computers than I did. Because they had no choice. They didn't have any computers, so they were buying the latest.
They bought good ones. Oh, that's funny. Well, do they still have those stenographers that use those manual, you know, machines to write down what people say? Rather than just videotape it and then transcribe it from the videotape?
Of course.
Why?
I don't know. I have no idea why they do that, but yeah.
Nobody else does that. Everybody else videotapes. You know, you Zoom. You know,
But they do both.
Oh.
They record it And they sit there and type it at the same time. It's maybe it's just show business. I don't know.
But what's more accurate?
Well, they're not very accurate.
Well, I'm just saying, but so the person typing is going to screw up, or the video, I guess the video can be hacked and altered. So how do we know the records of anything? Speaking of sources and methods.
They're rarely accurate.
Okay.
Great. I mean, they had this meeting that they're hanging, and this is where I don't know how much time we have. They are hanging the charges of seditious conspiracy against these guys. And let me back and say, why do we care? They changed to seditious conspiracy because it's not tied to the people who are present at the Capitol. So they can use the seditious conspiracy to go out there and like vacuum up everybody from Trump to, you know, so they use this illogical, ill-fitting seditious conspiracy charge to, which is a worse charge to fit these guys with, so that they don't have to be limited to the people who are at the Capitol. And they're hanging it on this go-to meeting call on November 9th, 2020, transcribed, like you say, by somebody who wasn't there. They're just going by the thing. And so they get the people wrong. The transcript reports that half the conversation was from Kelly Meggs, because it's a woman's voice, and they don't know Kelly is not a woman. So they transcribed it as Kelly Meggs saying these things when it was actually Kelly Swarrell.
Oh,
and the government
Kelly.
Had to eat crow over this.
Oh, jeez.
So, it's like how accurate is like, you know, how muddy is muddy? You know, it's like, okay, this is horrible mud or it's not so bad mud, but it's still all mud.
I got a question. What would happen if a Ted Cruz actually grew a pair and said, that's not good enough? You can't say ongoing investigation. You have to tell us something about it. Now, we don't have to know the exact evidence. We don't have to know, you know, exactly who you're talking to this particular day, but we do have to know your procedure. We do have to know what you're doing. We do have to know where you're going. We do have to know what you're looking for. We do have to know if you're not violating the laws, whether you're a bunch of traitors or not. We have to know. We have to know if you were part of the FBI, part of the coup. You know, we have to know if you were encouraging people to go into the Capitol. That has nothing to do with sources and methods, unless your methods are treason. We need to know that. And this is an oversight hearing. You don't have the right to refuse to answer. Not on these grounds. You have to tell us. Unless you plan on doing something else, you know, with the rest of your life as far as employment goes. You know, I mean, they need to be able to fire these people on the spot. That would be a huge thing. That would be a huge help.
Yeah, they could.
They don't answer.
They could pass a law saying that they have to report, you know, file a report with the chief judge in camera, you know, confidentially, identifying what investigations are still ongoing. And again, you know, if you're investigating something that the statute of limitations has already expired, then, you know, what, you know, Whiskey Tango.
But you shouldn't have to wait for that, though. You know, the fact they should be able to answer a question. Did you have FBI personnel encouraging people to walk into the top of the Capitol? That's not a sources and methods or that's a question that's, again, it's perjury or treason. That's what they're doing, is they're avoiding the question. What I need to know is, do we need to change the legislation? Do we need to make it so that they can't? Are there procedures in Congress already that under an authorization, under an oversight hearing, that they're compelled to answer? Aren't they put under oath? Aren't they required to answer? Or do we need to look more into this?
I think they can go into closed session.
They don't have to go into closed session. That's the public needs to know. Do we have traitors in the FBI?
It looks like our fearless leaders don't have the guts to.
Well, that's the problem.
You know, to go into closed session and ask those questions.
So, is there a place I can look up oversight? I guess rules, procedures, authorizations. I mean, limitations. Oversight. I'm making a big note to myself.
There is no oversight. There is no role for. There is no power of oversight listed in the Constitution, but the courts have interpreted that in order to do their job, they have unlimited powers of oversight, And they are the Congress is the judge of their own powers uh-huh. and the judge of what they think they need.
Well, they can also...
So the way the courts have...
go ahead, Jonathan. I'm sorry.
No, so the way the courts have interpreted it, Congress can, you know, could do anything uh-huh. in relation to oversight of... now, it's oversight of the agencies that it funds. It's
That's
not oversight over every area. You know, they don't have oversight over you or me. Or
No. I'm only talking about within
by...
the government. It's only because they
right.
In fact, that was the point I was going to make. If they control the budgets, then they have to know where the money is spent. And if the money is spent on people
exactly.
that are traitors, then that's a problem. So I think it is constitutionally authorized as long as they stay within the executive branch. Well, they can investigate themselves as the Congress. They can investigate the executive and they can investigate the Supreme Court. That's one of the biggest places they should investigate. You want to find a bunch of traitors, you know, a bunch of people that created judicial review. And that's a whole other story we've talked about. But these people have no relationship with the Constitution whatsoever. There are some
right,
people that need to be gotten rid of, but that's another story. Let's stick with the FBI. Go ahead.
Right. But I think you raise a very important point, which is that, you know, if they want to protect sources and methods,
mm-hmm.
which is we sat down at the table, you know, we pulled out a notepad, we asked the guy questions, and we wrote down his answers. Those are our top secret methods that we wouldn't want anyone to find out
about. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not a secret. Well, sources,
right.
I want them to keep sources secret, but sources are sources of information. Sources are not people that are actively acting as part of the coup and the deep state ushering Trump supporters into the top of the Capitol so they can commit treason underneath it. That's not a source. That's an operative. So what they're really doing
right.
is protecting
but
operatives. And we're not – they're just asking about operatives, not sources and methods. Is that about operatives? But that does go to methods.
Well, I mean,
those are
they would
methods.
Say that's a method of preparing a police officer to pretend to be somebody he's not and go undercover and infiltrate groups. And so this is a method that they wouldn't want anyone who has been watching cop shows since the 1970s to discover. It's like, oh, my God, they can do that?
Mm.
So this would be like, somebody might find out what they could find out by watching a 1970s cop show.
But we know the Patriot Act. We know their sources. We know their methods. It's in the Patriot Act. I believe those are illegal for the
yeah.
most part. But what method don't we know about already through the legislation? It's not like they can just make up stuff. Well, maybe they can. But in terms of we know enough about what they're doing illegal anyway, because it's in the Patriot Act, it's in the Anti-Terrorist Act, it's in the Insurrection Act, which I wanted to go over at some point. We'll probably do that next week. But there's a bunch of laws out there that allow them to do things that I think are criminal right now. Why do they need, what's secret? What can't we find out by looking it up, especially in the Patriot Act?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
So it's all BS, as you said. It's like, Jay, you said something at some point about is it BS? It's not only BS, it's very, very old BS. It's like as old as the hills.
Okay.
So
that was my question, the origins of the ongoing investigation. I mean, do you know how far – you may not know, but I'm just curious as to how long that's been an excuse and how long that's been an exemption from further questions, because that to me seems – that's the part that's BS. You can't say that. That's not good enough.
Well, I think it's just because they get away with stuff. So they say, this. If I just say these things, I get away with it, so I'll just say it all the time.
Yeah, see, any like, congressperson or senator should say, well, so what? That's not good enough. I'm still asking the same question. What's going on? Well, that sources and methods on the investigation. I don't care. I want to know. What are you doing?
Right.
That's not good enough.
Right.
That's not an excuse. That doesn't apply.
And when you talk to when you talk about a source,
mm-hmm.
there is authority precedence about the fact that a witness does not belong to one side or the other.
Hmm.
You know, you can't say this is our witness. No, it is a witness is a witness for everybody. A witness is a witness of the truth, not this is my witness. And so, you know, do they have sources or do they have witnesses that they are withholding from the other side illegally?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exculpatory, right? So, isn't that what they call exculpatory evidence, which is evidence that can free
the
other person that they're...
of the Brady.
Right, go ahead.
Yes, it's a violation of Brady. Brady versus Maryland.
Got it.
You know, and they're so indoctrinated into breaking the rules and violating the Constitution that they're offended when you point it out.
Well, that's the club. That's the club thing. You know, and they're so used to lying to each other, and they're so used, like you say, they're so used to getting away with it, that when someone challenges them and says, "Oh no, you can't, that's not a good enough excuse anymore. We're not taking that anymore." That'd be such a shock to the system. I'm sure the Democrat chair would rush to the aid of the traitor in the FBI, saying, "Well, you can't ask him about that." I said, "Well, I'm a member of Congress. I can ask anything I want." That's what we really need. We need some people that actually know how to do this. Know how to do a decent interrogation, as they said in one of the James Bond films. Pierce Brosnan. Nobody does a decent interrogation anymore. You know, and it's true. They don't. They're afraid to ask a question. They're afraid of their own shadow. Are they afraid of the intelligence community investigating them? Is that what's going on? Is there blackmail? And I got Dorothy in line too. Excuse me. We're going to get to her in just a second. But is there blackmail of members of Congress that we don't know about, that the intelligence community says, well, you can only ask these questions and don't push too hard because we know about your brother, or like in the case of Rand Paul, knows about his wife who's in some kind of shipping business, or, oh, that's Mitch McConnell. But Rand Paul is connected to China also. You know, I mean, are these people all blackmailed by the FBI? Is that their job to blackmail members of Congress for the administration?
I don't know how much time we have. I know I never have enough time.
Well, we'll do it next week.
We want to talk about the insurrection. Because
I got Dorothy online right now. I'm going to bring her on so she can listen in and comment.
Well, and maybe we'll talk about it next time. But let me just preview it that when Stuart Rhodes put out public open letters to the government and public calls to action and things, they were co-authored by Kelly Swarrell on their website, which had to be recovered. Not because the Oath Keepers deleted it, but because the cancel culture deleted it, deplatformed them. The number one thing that Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers, Kelly Swarrell, pushed for was for Trump to declassify everything.
He should have.
Pour it all out, precisely because he assumed that these people are being blackmailed. When it comes to blackmail, you know, if the bomb's gone off, the blackmail no longer works.
Yeah. Well, that's what he did with the conversation with Ukraine. He published a transcript, and they were trying to blackmail him into impeachment with Ukraine. He said, "Well, here's the conversation. What's your problem?" You know, I mean, it's fabulous what he did. Okay.
And Trump kept saying he was going to declassify everything. The government kept trying to say, "Oh no, no, we need to review this. We need to redact this." Same old BS that you were just talking about. It's like, oh, sources and methods. They'll find out we use pens and paper. It's been a long time in the making. But they BS'd Trump to drag his feet for a year and a half. Right. And it is on the archive of the White House website. That on January 17th, 2021, while he was still president, he mass declassified a truckload of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's there on the website while he was still president. And there's a further discussion of it up through January 19th, 2021. The problem is, of course, we don't know what documents they're talking about. So we can't crosswalk those documents. But anyway, the Insurrection Act, too.
We got to go. We got to do this quickly because I got Dorothy and Jesse has a question for you, too. So
all right. Well, we'll talk
about it in more
week,
detail
again,
next time. Yeah.
I have a question.
Again,
let me see. Josie's got a quick question for you. And well, hold on just a second. Dorothy, do you have a few minutes past the top of the hour just in case we run long? Because I don't think Heather's going to make it today.
I do today. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Good. Well, then we got a couple extra minutes. Feel free to join us, too. This is, you know, if we can mix, you know, sex and legal stuff, I mean, this. It's kind of always interesting to put those two together. Anyway, Josie, go ahead. What's your question for Jonathan?
Hey, good morning. Jonathan, I do have a question. Since they're coming after all the Trump supporters that were at the Capitol outside marching and supporting like I did, so if they knock on my door, what do I ask for? from the criminals
at
the door?
The thing, if they have a search warrant from a judge, you know, first of all, you should make sure they're not taking your only copy of things. You should have a copy of whatever's on your phone or computer so that you can defend yourself, because that's one of the big debilitating issues here. They come and they take data, and then you don't have it. They have it and you don't. The other thing you should do is insist upon your right to observe what they're doing. And if they, now, you know, don't get in a fight with the police, but, you know, physical, but insist that you have a right to observe what they're searching and what they're looking at. Because they, which is what they didn't do, with Trump. You can't, you know, force them perhaps to do what they're supposed to do, but you can verbally insist upon it and make sure that you're not giving your consent to something that you don't consent to. You can say, it's like, well, I'm going to, you can say that, you know, I'm not going to, with you, but I'm not consenting. I have a right to see what you're searching. You can only take what the search warrant says. You can only search where the search warrant says.
You can read
go
the warrant.
Frolic.
Too. Can't you read the warrant?
Yeah.
And they have to wait until
you finish. Typically they'll only give it to you after the fact, which is useless.
Right.
So you say, I want to see it before the fact.
And you know, I heard you talking with Greg. What are they looking for? What are they really looking for? Photos? I mean, because there was two million people marching outside. We went to support our president. We knew because our team leader told us that there were going to be over 2,000. She wasn't sure. She said, we're going to be protected by the National Guard. There's going to be top security. We're going to be fine. So that's what they were told when they sent us. You know, we went in a big group, Christian families.
Well, I got to get off because one of the people I'm working with is calling now. But the thing is they're looking for whether you have evidence of someone else. So if your involvement is minor, they may be seeing it. Perhaps you videotaped or have messages or information about somebody whose actions were not as minor as you. But they may also be looking for any communications of yours.
Everything's on our shows. Jonathan, everything's on our show. We talked about this. You know, there. We've got you guys live from Washington.
They believe that there's some sinister things that, you know, you know, they're going to find out about the secret meetings, you know, the double secret probation.
The secret handshake.
Who killed the horse in the principal's bed or whatever?
Personally, this is all a show that they're doing, but they're really after Nancy Pelosi's laptop that Donald Trump has. That's exactly what they're after right now. So that's
I think they're also just trying to see what might turn up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
fishing expedition.
Right. Now, they have many of the search warrants have asked for clothing, which I find extremely abusive. You know, because they've
that's because they want to wear Melania's underwear. That's what's going on.
For
what
mega
were you saying about the clothing?
They've looked like with the Proud Boys cases. They've looked for any Proud Boy. They've asked for any Proud Boy clothing with the Oath Keepers. They've asked for with any Oath Keeper clothing. They've looked for any MAGA hats, and I consider that to be very abusive, because it's implying that membership in a group makes you guilty.
Yeah, go by association.
That's a First Amendment violation.
Yeah. Hey, let's pick it up next week, folks.
All right, thank you so much.
Call earlier next time, Josie.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, see you later. This is fascinating fun. Thanks, Jonathan. Let's do it next week. I know you got calls there.
I got to call these people back, I think.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Back in 2 minutes with Dorothy. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. All right, we are back. And so one thing to do is for background noise and stuff, you want to mute yourself, even if I don't. I try to mute my folks calling in, but just in case, because, you know, we hear dogs barking in the background and doors slamming and, you know, kind of birdies in the trees. It gets kind of fun around here. Anyway, Dorothy, we've had quite a morning so far. Jonathan said he only had a few minutes to call, and like an hour and 10 minutes later, he was still chatting. So it's Action Radio. Once you get involved in the topics, and of course, we're breaking new ground and, you know, accusing the FBI of treason. And, you know, it's a typical day here at Action Radio. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. Well, and you might hear a dog bark or two.
Well, where
from my end.
Yeah. Okay. Any new cafes visiting? I still want to get you and Shirley together for like a cafe report.
I mean, I love cafes.
I
love cafes. I mean, cafe, as long as we're talking about the main point being coffee. Yeah.
That's my thing. The reason this came about was because Shirley Wattrell, who does our DC Project Women and Guns report on Friday, and Dorothy Diana, who does our Sex and Sensuality report, both reported being at cafes on the same day. I'm looking at Facebook going, oh, Shirley's at one and Dorothy's at one. I said, we got to do something with this. Maybe we should all get together and have a cafe report, or just, you know, post our favorite cafes or form a group, because this is one of the most social places. It's fun. It's not loud. There's no rock band, you know, blocking out your hearing, you know, and I like rock bands. And I play in, you know, well, not right now, but I'm looking for one. But, you know, you go to see a rock band, to see the rock band, hopefully. But conversation's limited. But a cafe, it's like a pub in England. You know, you talk to people.
It is.
Noise. It's fun. It's exciting. It's wonderful. New experiences.
They all have different vibes, too. So the cafe will all have a different vibe. And so in our town, you know, I choose my cafes not just based on the quality of coffee, which is really important to me, if you can make an excellent latte, but also like the vibe and who's going there, and is everyone stuck to a computer, or is there potential for conversation?
Well, that's my question.
Are the baristas
that's
friendly, or do they have that sort of snotty shtick that happens sometimes where they're purposely... I mean, that's a thing. In Santa Monica, that was a thing. Like our really popular cafes that the writers, the entertainment industry writers would gather at. For some reason, the baristas all had this very aloof, condescending, and it was almost like their thing. And we used to joke about it, but I prefer a cafe where the baristas are, you know, chill and friendly. And
you were in Santa Monica? When were you in Santa Monica?
Well, I was.
Did you live there?
All the babies were born there. And I was a nurse there for years, and then I felt very called intuitively, strongly to get out of there once my third was born, that I felt my boys needed to run free in the woods, essentially. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Being your family.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Well, I mean, I left California 5 years ago, actually 2017 when I got the job out here, and I've been looking, you know, to get out of California for a while, and so I'm applying all across the nation for a radio station. And so I was out in 2017, but I was in the San Francisco Bay Area for like 30 years. It was fun in the beginning, and then it kind of gradually got worse. And once my daughter was old enough for college, you know, she went her way, I went mine down here. And it's fascinating, but California, it's an attitude, it's a, you know, but a snooty Santa Monica pier, you know, it's not that far from Hollywood. What's it Sheryl Crow saying about, you know, Santa Monica Boulevard? Yeah, that song. So yeah.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, Santa Monica Boulevard runs all the way across. I mean, practically all the way across L.A. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it goes east-west, so you can get, gosh, I can't remember how far. I think you can get to downtown, just about.
From the beach? From the pier?
Useless fact there.
No, it's kind of, but the point being, though, that cafes are a great place to meet. I mean, when I bummed around Europe for 3 months, you know, I lived in cafes and pubs, or the equivalent, depending on the nation I was in, you know, because that's where the people were. And even if they didn't speak English,
I love it too. Yeah. And you can get into any conversation. What difference in Santa Monica than here? I found it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I could go to this cute little cafe on the corner. I just walk there. It's called Groundworks. A lot of your listeners might know it. And mm-hmm. on Montana and I think 16th. But I have the best conversations. I would just grab a latte and even just sit or just standing in line. I met the most interesting people and talked about the most interesting things. There were no topics that were off limits, a lot of open-mindedness. And I don't know how that would be now, because I feel like the last 2.5 years has done something
That's
in California
really
and its willingness
question.
To be the willingness yeah. to be open and to discuss anything. I feel like there's so many topics that are off limits now, sort of psychologically. But I will say back then, that's something I would just I really enjoyed, that I feel like any topic, interesting people who've done a lot of things with their lives, have a lot of great information. And when I moved here, I would say there was a little bit of a difference in that they're used more for work spaces. So you will find people to chat with, but a lot of people are just kind of glued to their computer there, which again,
yeah, California
is fine.
When I left, they were,
yeah.
You know, and here's the thing.
In our neighborhood,
never understood.
Not so much. In our neighborhood, it wasn't that way. I mean, and this is again, north of Montana, so it's a little specialized, but
right.
here I found a lot more people glued to the computer and working, which is fine, but it'd be nice to have that sort of social pub type that you're
well,
talking
are they,
about.
Are they there for the free Wi-Fi or they just want to be around people and not talk to them? I mean, you know, what's the deal? But it's fascinating
I
that they go to
I feel like people want to get out of the house sometimes, like people with kids mm-hmm. need to work and they work from home and they want to get out of the house, you know,
yeah.
and that's understandable.
But they're always the contradiction that I find is that you're going to a public place and you completely seal yourself off. You put earbuds in so nobody can talk to you. You can't hear anything. You're staring
mm-hmm.
at a screen so you can't make eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
You do everything possible mm-hmm. in the most public and friendly place I can imagine, a cafe or a pub,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you're sitting there amongst other people, purposely avoiding any contact with them. It might as well be on a subway. I mean, at least we know we don't talk to each other there. What is it?
I think it's a combination of social fear and egotism. Like, I do think some people want to be seen as hard workers. Like, they like to be in public. They want to sort of be social, but they really want to be seen as someone who's super busy and hardworking, and they're a little shy and unsure themselves socially. I think it's multifactorial. That's my hypothesis. I don't know.
Who would you be seen by, though, unless you knew somebody was in the cafe that you wanted to be seen by, or just seen by anybody, where people think they're going
to
be...
have that image of someone who's busy and works really hard and has their own business, can't be bothered. I don't know. That's what I pick up on sometimes.
No, but it makes sense. But then
wrong.
You got a bunch of people. It's like saying it's the old, you know, when you had to make a 2-minute speech before your class, you know, everybody cares what they're saying. They're not listening to what you're saying. If you're the only person listening to what
true?
You say. Nobody else cares. Well, same in a cafe. If everybody's there to be seen, then everybody's concerned with themselves being seen and they're not looking at anybody else. So it defeats the purpose.
You and
Just
I
an
are, like, I'm sure, famous. I bet I have a feeling if you and I went into a cafe where people are trying to work within 5 minutes, everyone's in a conversation. No one's getting any work done. If I just start a conversation,
do you want to try
everybody.
That sometime? Do you want to try that? I'm serious.
I mean, I can think of anything to start a conversation with: somebody's ring, somebody's computer, laptop cover. I mean, the barista's attitude, like whatever, you know.
Well, see, I do exactly the same thing, but I'm just trying to think of the dynamic if both of us were, because I'm dangerous in a cafe. I'll just look at people and go, "What are you doing?" And
I love
why are you looking at me? Well, because you're not talking. What are you doing? I'm working. I'm important.
Well, I like
oh,
to start
okay,
with
fine.
A compliment.
Well,
I like to start with a flirtation, and I don't mean that.
Oh, you're better than me.
Yeah, flirtation. I always feel like you get them with honey and say, oh, my goodness, I love your blah, or, well, what are you drinking? It looks delicious, or, you know, something like
I'll
that.
I'll do that.
And there you go.
Yeah. On, you know, whatever it is they're drinking. If they like it, chances are I might too. But the Cafe Dynamics,
yeah.
We need to do a show. I think we've almost done a show on that. But
we can, but today we're talking about boobies, aren't we? I thought we were talking about boobies.
Yes, this is a boob show. Yeah, this is absolutely a boob show.
Yes, I'm
go
so
ahead.
Excited.
So we just kind of, well, we got time, like I say. Now, Heather, my friend and our new reporter, the Rebel, you know, she wrote a book called Rebel Keto, which is coming out in October. Heather's amazing, yeah. But she's busy and stuff, and I don't know if she's going to make her report. So we got a little bit of extra time, in which case I'll get into all the 9/11
and
theories.
And I probably need to sign off no later than 11:10, 11:15.
That's fine.
Just because
that's still 50
I
minutes of boobs.
Everyone. I don't own
you know,
my own life. Yes, let's
yeah, that's
do
true.
It. And so,
okay, go ahead. Tell me the story.
That was your topic. Okay, well, that was your topic suggestion. But
yeah,
it was interesting. It was interesting because this week, for some reason, on my feed, mm-hmm. well, I mean, I get a lot of sexual stuff on my feed. I had a couple mm-hmm. different breast posts, and one of them was super fun. I don't know. I think you saw it or you posted it. I'm not sure. But it was the one, the breasts in the 70s versus breasts today, like pictures
no,
of
I didn't
breasts
see that.
In the media.
No.
That
You're
was
to
great.
Tell me the story.
I'll try to find that again. But
okay.
It was all a big panorama of breasts in the media mm-hmm. In the 70s and what that looked like. And even just, there it wasn't all media famous breasts. It was also just women talking or
famous
one
breasts.
Of,
oh, we didn't even talk. See, here's the thing. Other shows will just talk about like dress sizes, you know, or dress, you know, mm-hmm. hemlines and things. We don't care. No, we're going to go right for the boob size because that is fascinating.
Well, here's the
know,
thing.
Boobs
I want,
and politics,
here's the point
boobs
I wanted.
And celebrities. Yeah, go ahead. I'm curious.
Here's the point I wanted to make because mm-hmm. they even showed Jagger, Bianca Jagger with a friend at one of those clubs in New York, like super, you know, she like all gaunt looking and anorexic, and mm-hmm. You know, the woman had a gauze shirt on, her friend, like a see-through
gauze.
And there were no breasts there, like it was very almost flat-chested, and the whole point of this was the breasts were very natural, like you could see the nipple through the shirt, there wasn't a bra, they were what we would consider saggy now, but they aren't, they were like just real and they weren't very big, they were all different sizes, but around us I would say from 34A to maybe 34B was about what you were seeing, maybe a couple feet.
See,
in there.
I can't relate to that.
But,
you know, mm-hmm. so, you guys, I got to tell you right now, guys, when women start doing bra sizes, that always cracks us guys up because we have no clue what you're mm-hmm. talking about. We don't
well,
know.
Well, let's put it in the French. The way the French say it is a champagne uh-huh. glass. So more than a champagne glass is too much. That's a French thing. So not the long tube champagne glass. So don't get that image in your head. But the, although that is a normal, natural breast size, falls within the range of
what
normal.
What is it like a brandy
but
snifter?
the champagne glasses that are wide at the top, you know, the little, the like the ones that are the bowls almost a little. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that size is what we were looking at in the 70s.
So how can you say too mm-hmm. little or too much? I mean, it depends on the person. If you have a taller or bigger person, obviously they're going to, you know, well, not necessarily, but, you know, if you have huge boobs on a short woman or, you know, smaller ones on a taller woman, that's a difference. But too much or too little, isn't it, that sounds very subjective. And they actually look like they're getting objective criteria there.
Well, you're right.
Glass.
And there's, I think the French saying came up, I mean, I'm not saying I agree with it, but I think it came about because what they were saying is a petite, normal breast is beautiful and sensitive and plenty. I think that's what the point is, essentially. But,
maybe to the French.
And then the whole thing should fit in the mouth. I think that was one of the things. Oh. It's nice to be able to put the whole thing in the mouth. I don't want to get too graphic, but.
No, we don't.
That was kind of the appeal there.
We can be
there.
Suggestive and subtle and metaphorical and sort of indicate towards, but without actually stating the graphic, yeah. Which I think is going to be more fun.
Okay, was that too graphic?
Too. Unless you want to state the graphic if it's necessary, but yeah.
Well, what I mean, that I think that when we're talking about breasts, we have to acknowledge they're not just serving the purpose of feeding babies. They're also very erotic. They're not just reproductive.
See,
they are
a dual purpose.
In our culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's not true across cultures. It's true for sure for our culture, though, and the way that came about has been very interesting. Yeah.
Well, the way this came about, there was a posting that where I got the idea from was a comment that you had made on our life and health coaching page, and which I thought was hysterical, by the way. That was a great comment.
Yeah.
but it was actually a serious post, though, because we had just done a show recently with some of our survivors of breast implants. And so I wanted to take your comment as funny, which it was, but also put it in context as to why some of the folks, you know, that might have read that go, what is she talking about? You know, with I forgot exactly the comment you made. You can describe it or not, but it was pretty graphic of yourself. And I said something to the effect of, thank you very much. You know, I'm glad to know that. And so is every other guy on this page, which I thought was pretty hysterical too. But the point was that we do, that is a serious thing. You know, our breast implant, we have a bill with full medical disclosure on breast implants. I'm going to work with these folks again. There's four unbelievable women that I've had on the show a couple of times. And so we talked about that, but that's not what I want to talk about with you, because I got the, I was thinking to myself, well, wait a minute, there's a whole political, social, you know, literature side, magazine side, advertising side, you know, there's all these implications. And I thought, let's do a boob show. Even the word boob implies stupid, you know, so big boobs imply stupidity, you know, and yet that's actually what it is. This is, you know, people think that the huge women are you have less intelligence for some reason.
You know,
I'm not even sure how that got going. Go ahead.
There is research that was good enough that it gets requoted quite a few times that show, if you're looking at natural breasts, that a fuller breast was associated with higher intelligence. That sounds crazy. And we're not talking about augmentation, obviously.
Yeah.
We're not talking about augmentation or obesity. Okay. We're talking about a natural larger breast was associated with higher intelligence.
Why was that?
Go figure. Who knows? But the average breast size in the 1980s, this is interesting, was 34B, and now it is 34DD in the U.S.
Okay, we're talking natural. Mm. We're not talking augmented, artificially created.
Well, no,
you know, created.
We're talking about everything. We're talking about bra size. We're not excluding anybody from this. So you're right. There's reasons for that. Obesity diet is one. Augmentation has skyrocketed since the 80s when the plastic surgery industry went full throttle on a convincing women that, you know, micro or hypoplasia of the breast. What is it called?
That's a bad word for breast. Micro is a bad word for breasts. And it's like man part size. It's a bad word when you say micro. People don't want to hear that.
Yeah. Just telling them that it's really almost, it's a disease. That it's pretty much a disease. And that started, you know, actually in the late 1800s, that started trickling in advertisements and things that smaller or flatter breasts are really just abhorrent and ruin a woman's life and that she should be plumper. I mean, the amount of money that was made on creams and devices since then is through the roof. And then the plastic surgery industry in the 80s began a hardcore campaign as they had started to perfect their silicone implants. And so then everything skyrocketed. Now we have the diet issues, obviously, and estrogen mimickers in the water and the plastics. So all of these are contributing to those larger breast size in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is fascinating to me. Like I say, I've never thought of tracking this. This is why I love having you on, because of the things that we talk about that, you know, I'll think of like a brief fleeting thought will go by and then we start exploring and I go, wow, there's a lot more to this than I thought, you know, and this is why this report's so fascinating. Excuse me. But,
well, another interesting thing
get
is,
my water
is
here,
less
but,
than
yeah.
one. Well, oh, less than 1% of women naturally have a D cup. In the U.S.
What's a D cup?
Now, this is different in other countries.
In terms of
like,
man hand size, how are we talking about here? Did someone say more than a handful of waist? It's like, well, it depends on your hand, pal. I got lumberjack hands, okay? I got a huge hand.
I could
wield
an
axe. Go ahead, what?
Well, I can think of I don't know how to describe a D cup. I mean, significant cleavage. I mean, you know, gosh.
Cleavage is another whole issue, too. To show or not to show.
Well, that is a huge issue, and I love that topic because there's a huge amount of sexism and cultural patriarchy, and I don't want to get into trigger words for anyone, but
no,
that
go
is
ahead.
Real.
Trigger.
I mean,
please, feel free. Trigger away.
Because it's interesting. So when they surveyed, they did a really good study where they surveyed lots of women of different ages in the U.S., and what they found the most erotic, appealing turn on male body part for women, 51% said the chest, the male chest.
Interesting.
Okay. So that
accompanied by a narrow waist by chance and then not a large abdomen, which a lot of guys get in later life?
Probably, but they didn't get that specific. They just said a nice chest was the number one attractive, erotic thing women like to look at and touch.
That was a question.
17% was penis. Mm-hmm. Only 17.
Well, but you can't look. You can look at our man part and you're not going to see anything because we wear pants, generally.
Well, here's the thing. So that kind of just begs the question. Well, and this is a huge topic. Like, why are women's breasts legally have to be covered in the U.S.? You know, there was a group of African students. there was a group of African students that protested because when they went to Johannesburg to go to school, they continued their cultural practices of their dancing together, and uh-huh. they would dance like they did in their community, and they would dance topless as they always had, and uh-huh. they were gathering a big community of girls that were really grateful that they had brought this to the big city because they felt sort of homesick, and so uh-huh. they began posting it, and Google banned them. Google banned them, saying it was, you know, perverted and lewd, and they were like, wait a minute, but in our culture, it's not. Like, this is how we do, and it's not considered that way. So, you know, then we go to the U.S. and say, well, you know, again, similar, like, who decides what that breasts are lewd and lascivious and not just
natural.
A part of the body? Yeah, like, why do women's breasts have to be covered and men's don't? And, you know, it feels a little bit like because it turns men on. So if it turns men on, then you need to cover it and it's shameful, which kind of feels
why
a little
why does it turn men on? I know it turns men on, but I'm curious why. Is there an explanation for that? Why are we guys turned on by boobs? I'm just curious.
Well, I think partially it's cultural and partially, you know, there's obviously the oxytocin release. So when you're having sex and the nipples are stimulated and they're sucked on, and there's a huge amount of bonding that occurs. And, you know, men have that too. Men have research dictates that it's arguable that many men have as much nipple as their erogenous zone in the nipple as women, that a lot of men that is almost equal, if not equal. Okay. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of dopamine release, oxytocin release, and then you're bonded to this woman, and this is the same sort of bonding that happens, I mean, honestly, with infant attachment, yeah? And so we could argue that it just helps the species procreate. It helps a woman become attached to a man. The man knows that if he is stimulating the breasts and touching the breasts, that she will become attached. Maybe she'll be a safe carrier for his baby, trustworthy
That's
his mom. I mean, there's all of that.
But it's just interesting.
And then
all guys go
through. It's been culturally promoted too.
Yeah, it's like when guys are babies, you know, boobs are for food, and then we cross that line, and then they're for fun, you know, puberty somewhere along the line, you know. It's an interesting transition.
And what if you weren't breastfed enough? Maybe if you weren't breastfed enough, there's some sort of longing.
Oh, are there studies on that?
Men might have. There's a little bit, yeah, a little bit of a hypothesis that there's this longing,
but you don't
the desire to get back there.
Oh, see, that's a whole area of psychology that's interesting. I mean, you know, I don't think most guys want to think that, you know, the fun parts are there for they're going back to their childhood, because that's a bad image. You know, for like, it's not childhood mom. Get that thought out of your head. This is you know, modern day. This is fun. I'm an adult. You know, they're not going to want
to. It's very nurturing and comforting.
So are women nurturing and comforting their grown adult men?
I mean, I think there's an element to that. It feels like there's an element to that, and that not only I feel like universally the breasts are nurturing and comforting. I mean, when you look at studies that interview women, also it looks like across gender and sexual identity, the breasts are seen as attractive, nurturing, magnetic. So probably very deeply in our psyche, in our
Well, that's interesting.
Going way back, right?
So now you've got a whole range of things from nurturing to attractive to fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's an interesting dynamic. I never thought about that either. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so
now our breast cancer
lot...
rates are through the roof, which is interesting.
Why?
Also, I mean, I don't want to get negative and bummer, but
why is that?
It's a huge topic. Well, I mean, I have my opinion, but there's research that supports. So if you look into like WebMD or you look into allopathic medicine, they have one story on why that is. Mm-hmm. If you look into functional medicine, chiropractic, you know, doctors that actually cure breast cancer versus going on chemo, you get another mm-hmm. story. And I tend to fall into the latter in my belief system.
Hmm.
So we know that breast cancer has skyrocketed at the same time as a lot of birth control
vaccinations
in the water
and
system.
Chemicals
I will
too,
say that.
So, yeah, I mean,
so
I think it's probably closer to that. Yeah.
Yes, there's a huge faction of researchers that believe vaccinations promote not just obviously transgender and gender identity, but of course, autism, which correlates, the rates of autism correlate very nicely with the rates of gender diversity, okay? Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, gender diversity, you know, that's a fact. They correlate, and there's been mainstream research that discusses that, so it's not just these, you know, conspiracy theorist quacks, I mean, as they call them. It, you know, mainstream medicine supports the link between autism and transgender, and they have all kinds of theories why.
Now I'm interested because, you know, this autism is on the rise hugely. I have friends with autistic kids, you know, and so
yeah.
I know a little, I'm not an expert, you know, but my daughter was like minimally vaccinated with like two, you know, everybody else got like 70, she got two. And so she's fine. But there's a lot of kids with autism and other problems and all kinds of Asperger's, you know, you name it. You know, I think a lot of it just traced back to the vaccines. But how does that affect transgender? That
I do, too.
Whole...
I think it does. And there is an excellent study on thimerosal and premature puberty. I mean, there's quite a few studies, but completely widely accepted, not really debatable, that the thimerosal and mercury exposure increases the rate of premature puberty. So there we have a lot of hormonal and developmental things. And I think it stands to reason. Well, and also breast cancer. So the earlier the breast develop, the more incidence of breast cancer. So I think it stands to reason that we can look at vaccines as a culprit that should be investigated further for sure. But we also have, obviously, you know, the plastics in the water bottles, plastics everywhere, estrogen mimickers causing
what
high
rates
of breast cancer.
Oh, wait, hold up. Estrogen mimickers. What are we talking about?
Yeah, so plastic is an estrogen mimicker. So when you drink out of a plastic water bottle, you give your kids plastic water bottles, it's it contributes to men, gynecomastia, men having breast tissue, and it changes the
from
breast tissue.
From plastic water bottles?
Women.
So
yeah,
what's happening? Is the plastic dissolving in
leaches
the water?
Leaches into
or
the
some,
water, yeah.
And then the plastic, is it reforming in your bloodstream or something and going to organs? What's going on?
It's an estrogen mimicker, so it enters the body as estrogen. And then if you combine that with, like, so women on birth control, when they pee, that estrogen never breaks down. That's in our water system. So every woman on chemical or pills birth control, that's in our water also. So it's interesting.
Well, if you're drinking water that's like sewer water treated as opposed to artesian well fresh spring water, where it wouldn't be.
It doesn't – It but look – our spring water, we have a water cycle. All the water eventually gets mixed in together. Yeah.
Huh.
So,
well, you know, another problem too is, go ahead and finish that. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was saying another source of estrogen that's very common that men should not be, you know, taking in, and that's soy.
Yeah, soy.
Soy
that's
milk,
true.
Soy
I mean,
protein,
a little bit, okay.
Tofu. Men, don't eat soy.
But,
okay,
I mean,
soy sauce is okay.
The
it's fermented.
The problem isn't the Eastern diet, which is heavy on edamame and miso soup and things like that. The problem is, if you look in our food supply now in the U.S., soy additives, genetically modified soy additives, are in everything. And I have a very close...
I read the label.
Well, not yours and not mine, but I have a very close friend right now, and I offered to take him grocery shopping. He has children. He's very healthy. He's very health conscious. But, like, I'm looking in his refrigerator, and I don't want to scold or lecture, but so heavy on the additives, because what they label it as natural balance, natural this, and when you look at the ingredients, and you have to really dig deep, because then that'll say plant based.
Yeah. Well, what do you find? What are the keywords?
Plant based is a big advertiser now.
Okay. So what are the words to look for? Plant based. What else are soy indicators or?
Well, you just
preserve.
Have to look at the ingredients, and you have to like they'll say bioengineered ingredients. I mean, soy is cheap. Soy lecithin in all the candies here in the U.S. That's why we order our chocolate in the U.K. It's just everywhere. And like you said, yes. So the amount we're consuming in our foods and our skincare products is the problem. You know, having a little edamame, like I said, or tofu here and there, I don't believe is the problem.
No. But if you got like soy milk, soy salad dressing, soy cereal, soy processed soy oil in your peanut butter. I mean, especially GMO soy. I think most of it's GMO soy at this point. Fermented soy, like soy
GMO
sauce, you know, in your sushi,
otherwise.
That's cool.
You're right.
You know, so drink all the soy sauce you want. It's just salty, but that's a different story. But men
you're right.
should
it's,
not
it's
have
in
plant estrogens.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
Right.
No man
boobs. And women either.
Men,
And women either. Women either. Yeah. So breast cancer for women and feminization of men. Mm-hmm.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So
processed foods.
That's,
we talked about
whole other
skincare
topic.
Products again. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, give me for instance.
Yeah. For
skincare.
Instance, what?
Mm-hmm. What kind of skincare?
Skincare.
Moisturizers.
So I love. I'm just gonna
makeup removers.
Gonna throw out this. This is a promotion of a website I love, the Environmental Working Group, EWG website. So
uh-huh.
who has time, unless you love it and you're obsessed like I am, to vet every skincare product, look at every ingredient, kind of go back and research if you don't know it, what is it, you know, mm-hmm. look at the who owns the company and how ethical they are, blah, blah. So skincare
right.
products full of cancer-causing stuff. I mean, we can start with the fragrances, the phthalates. Are you kidding? They are known to cause cancer. So any kind of a perfume or a phthalate.
What?
Fragrances, any artificial fragrance, and that like Bath and Body Works products. Like, I mean, I hope I can say that on the air.
Yeah, you can
I
now.
Mean, like the worst offenders, William
okay.
Sonoma candles, the worst offenders. Huh. Fragrances in the product.
You can
and,
say.
Yeah.
If you have a source,
so
especially,
they,
but
they,
if you, you know, if you, well, they, here's the guideline. If it's your suspicion, just say, this is my suspicion. This is what I think is happening.
Mm.
If there's a study on it, say, here's the study, here's the information, then here's the website.
Yeah.
You know, it just, if you strongly suspect, you know, you can do so just as long as you're honest with what you're saying. In other words, if you think this
caveat,
is happening,
yeah.
you can say that. If you
no
know
problem.
It's happening because it's documented, you can say that. And I don't care if you
yeah.
mention
so
company names, especially if it's a public study. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's been proven. That research has been done for many years, and it's sort of suppressed and kept under wraps because how would the skincare product industry do if they had to use steam distilled essential oils, right? Which
mm-hmm.
are basically the only fragrance product that is safe. Even the essential oil industry, you know, you have these cheap ones sold at like Harris, you know, sold at grocery stores, and they're made mm-hmm. with petroleum distilled oils. So then again,
of course
you have,
they are.
Cancer. Yeah. So you have to look for the steam distilled essential
Benzene.
Oil product. A lot of women I know make their own at this point. They just make their own and they do beautifully, you know?
Well, how many skincare products do you really need? You know, if you're healthy and you've got, you know, hydrated, I mean, how much, you know, you stay out of the sun, you know, like I burn easily. So, you know, so I'm always careful. That's why I don't go to the beach until winter or, you know, spring and fall. But I mean, there's a reason because I don't want to wear the sunscreen.
Well, for women in our
that's
culture,
not good for me.
Skincare,
yeah.
the skincare product industry is multi-billion dollars. The amount of advertising for anti-aging products and soft skin and tan skin. So, you know, it's multifactorial. On one hand, women have to get really smart. And like
mm-hmm.
you said, super hydrate, filter your water at home,
mm-hmm.
exercise. I'll tell you, the women I know who make their own skincare products use very basic ingredients and they're amazing. I know women who create lotions that absolutely do cure, like basically cure eczema, and the eczema skincare products are, you know, the
sale
of that is through the roof.
Let's get them on the show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean
eczema
not,
is one of the
exactly
side effects
your
of
topic,
the vaccines,
but...
too.
Yeah, yeah. No, and we also have, like my folks, you know, our Wild Women of Wellness on Wednesday, Chancey Terry, Lindsay Horton, and Paige Ward. Chancey especially does essential oils, massage therapy, things like that. And so I have a little frankincense myself here. It's pretty good stuff. You know, I don't know exactly
what it
does. I
love me
some
frankincense.
I feel great.
I love
you know,
it.
So,
and my favorite thing to do with frankincense is put a drop on the roof of your mouth, just a drop, and rub it in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I defer to your other radio show host, the healthy
oh, Chancy? Yeah.
product.
We'll,
what is she called?
We'll drag her on here sometime too. Yeah,
but she can probably attest to the benefits of that. Frankincense is really magical. I love it. I use it in everything. But okay, so again, furniture. Let's go to breast cancer. What causes it? Flame retardants in
mm-hmm.
furniture, carpeting. You know, I love IKEA, of course, for a great deal.
But
the formaldehyde glues. The fabrics, the mattresses are soaked in flame retardants. I think California had this law, which blew my mind. And in fact, we had our furniture made in California because you can get organic furniture made there. It's almost impossible to find elsewhere. But they do have this law that to sell a mattress there, a regular mattress, it had to withstand a blowtorch for like a minute without, I may be quoting the wrong time, but it was a long time. Like you have to be able to pull the blowtorch for a long
a minute.
Amount of time to,
well,
to the
Americans
mattress
who
in order for it to
charge their mattresses. This is a well-known American
pass
phenomenon.
The law, which the amount of flame retardants that you have to put in a mattress for it to pass is crazy. And we know they cause cancer. cancer. It's not up for debate. It's a known thing. So,
well, what gets the mattress so anyway? They're going to hit the sheets, bedspread, quilt, pillows first. I mean, those are the things where you might need. And what are people going to drop? A match, maybe a cigarette lighter, a candle, you know, some pretty small things.
So if you talk to firefighters.
Yeah.
And if you talk to firefighters, so you begin to suspect that this is a mattress industry lobbying thing. So that they have to charge more to say it's, you know, passes all the codes, you know, some sort of political money thing, because when you actually talk to firefighters and look at the stats, it doesn't really support the need for that kind of requirement of flame retardant.
Where do fires start? That's another good topic for us. So you have a wealth of topics. We need to do a bed report.
I know,
too,
I really do.
Which are sexy
place,
beds,
but...
which are not. You know, do you need the adjustable, you know, sleep number? I mean, we can have some fun with this. You know, the sex of beds.
Yeah, so I'm a huge advocate, and I'm sure your other hosts would agree to this, your other guest speakers, but the mattress is the number one, in my opinion, thing to change out in your home, make sure it's organic, and because you spend so much time sleeping on it, and they do off-gas so much of their toxins. So the mattress, if you can afford one thing to really indulge in, and there are a few really great companies. They used to be very expensive, very prohibitive expensive, but now no longer really. Mm. So anyway,
oh, I hear the
preventing
dogs
breast cancer.
Yeah.
Those are actually not my dogs. Those are neighbor dogs walking by that get excited when they see my dogs.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. So we can do like a waterbed show, another mattress show. We can do that. This is quite fascinating. I mean, there's so many things related. It's interesting. The more I do the show, the more I realize everything relates to everything else. You know, nutrition, vaccination, breast cancer, you know, sex, you know, advertising, politics. And we should talk about like what do women wear in political debates, for example. You know, you want to look sexy, but not too sexy because you want to look competent. You want to look stupid. So, you know, I mean, that's a... Well, let's now that we're there, let's go there.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
What do you think? I mean, how does a woman look competent and sexy? Because I'll give you, for example, Sarah Palin. All us guys love Sarah Palin. I mean, she was totally hot. She had that big sparkly smile and those bright eyes. But wow! And then we listened to what she said, and that was really good too. So we got the sparkle at first and thought she was just dynamic. And what she said about America and America First was like really great too. So not only was she totally hot, she was brilliant. And so that's an unbeatable combination as far as I'm concerned, especially for guys. I don't know. Women saw Sarah Palin. Women tended to hate her for some reason. I don't know if it's jealousy or what, maybe because she was totally hot and brilliant, but for whatever reason,
I think you're not allowed to be right. I think you're not allowed to be feminine and attractive and also a political leader and also super smart about when I say, I mean, culturally, I don't believe that's true, but I think there's some sort of an unstated rule that she was violating, you know, which I think is great, but.
Well, let's talk about that. So, cause we're going to have political debates coming up here too. You know, I mean, who can't be in office? You know, there's a difference between, let's say Nancy Pelosi, who's older. I mean, obviously she's got a difference as opposed to Sarah Palin, who was, you know, who's older now too, but why not? Why can't you do it? What about some of the younger politicians? You don't have to look like Patty Murphy. I mean, she purposely looks as homely as possible with a big sour expression on her face.
Well, I mean, there's a cultural push for women to be more masculine, and that a masculine woman is to be respected and a feminine woman is sort of to be despised. I mean, look at a Melania Trump, you know.
Uh-huh.
I didn't vote for Trump the first time around,
lady.
And I wasn't a huge fan of him the first time around, but I could see very clearly that she was incredibly beautiful, well-spoken. She was a great, very attached mother. So kind of all the things I kind of love. And I was kind of like, wow, she was pulled through the mud by the media. Like she was criticized.
Yeah.
Women like criticized, oh, she's not very pretty. Oh, look at her clothes. They're not good. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. Are we living in alternate realities? This woman is essentially
the same people
put
Hillary Clinton on the cover of their magazine saying, isn't she wonderful? It's like, give me a break. You know,
Obama's wife, Michelle, I mean,
she was
glorified as being the most beautiful and this and that. And look, objectively speaking, yes, she's cute, but she's no Melania Trump. Well, let's be honest, you know, and she has her other qualities.
Happens.
It's great, but, yeah, so I think you're not allowed to be, I mean, I think there's this despising and scorn for a woman who's made it successful and is very intelligent and also very feminine and pretty and owns it. Mm-hmm.
Well, are there corporate leaders? I'm trying to think of a woman who has a major corporation that is well known. And is, you know, incredibly attractive also. For some reason, Christy Hefner comes to mind, Hugh Hefner's daughter, who runs the Playboy Enterprise. I mean, she's pretty. But she also runs what a lot of women would consider an incredibly sexist operation, which I think is kind of fascinating, too.
That's interesting. I think that in her role, she probably has to be, I don't know, kind of expected, right, what she's doing. Let's see. That's a good question.
The other one, the other name, Kristen Sinema, the senator from Arizona. She's attractive.
Okay. What's her name?
Tulsi Gabbard. Kristen Sinema.
Oh, beautiful.
Blonde hair, big glasses. See, now I like glasses on women because they look more intelligent. Don't ask me why. That's, you want to talk about a stereotype? There's a stereotype. So you know, if you have to wear glasses, hey, women, if you have to wear glasses, wear the glasses, because all us guys, we had this, like, marrying the librarian, you know, but we still want you to be hot underneath when you take the glasses off kind of thing. There's a whole thing. We can do a sex of glasses. Go ahead.
It's really true. Isn't that funny? I don't know what that is. I never needed them. And then in my early 40s, I suddenly needed them for reading. And I'll tell you, there was this part of me that was excited. I went to the optometrist on Montana Avenue, and I was so excited to get my first. I was trying to convince them, I'm sure I need them, because I'm looking at food ingredients, as what I always do in the grocery stores. I'm having to pull back the product a little to look, so don't I need them? And they said, yes, I do. It's very, very... very mild prescription. I had to pull it away a little bit to read the ingredients. Okay. Yeah. But I was really excited because I felt the same way you do. I've never needed them. And I always thought
I've been
really attractive and intelligent.
I might wear them, but I don't need them. I like the effect. But I've always said, that's the only reason I didn't join the military, and, you know, as a pilot, because I already had a pilot's license at 17. And my vision at 16 was 20/10. You know, it doesn't get better than that. They don't even register better than that. I had the world's best eyesight. And then by 19, it was gone. It was like 2100. Now it's like 2400. You know, I still want to fly jets, though, but I have to get my own. That's a different story. But, you know, park a Learjet.
You learning to fly jets, or you already are a pilot?
I'm rated because I have an airline transport pilot rating, and I'm a commercial flight instructor, multi-engine instrument rated. So I got a bunch of ratings. And I got all my ratings right when the airlines went broke. So all the students went away, and all my skills gradually diminished, you know, before they started hiring again. So that's not a really happy chapter of my life. But the point is, I've got the ratings. I just need it's what's called a type rating. So in other words, when airplanes get to a certain level of complexity, and jets being that, you have to be rated to fly a particular type. So say I wanted to buy a Learjet, you know, like an older Learjet, 6-passenger, really fast and fun. I'd have to get a rating in that particular jet, or get a Lear type rating that might cover a bunch of different Learjets. The jet I want is a little 2-seat experimental, so I may not have to get a type rating because it's an experimental jet. But it also flies 500 miles an hour, has a slightly swept wing, and is fully aerobatic. That, to me, is a good time. It also goes 1,000 miles, so I could fly to an interview, you know, upside down half the time, as long as I wasn't on airways or official stuff or things like that. But I intend to yank and bank the hell out of my jet and then take it to media appearances, conventions, things like that. So for me, it's going to be a business expense, you know, Action Radio 1. And so I'm going to paint it all kinds of bright colors, and it's going to be fun. But all I need is somebody. I've got the ratings to fly it. I just don't have the currency. In other words, you have to fly within a certain amount of time, and I have to get a biennial flight review, and I have to actually in the next couple of weeks I'm going to get my flight instructor certificate recertified, and I have to do 16 hours of online training, and then I get every 2 years you get recertified to be an instructor, because I never want to lose my instructor rating. It took too long to get it. It was too hard to get it. So I'm going to keep that. But, yeah, jet, listen, I'm just going to find some. We got Air Force jocks all around here.
Wonderful. I love it. My father was a pilot. I have all kinds of pilots in my family. I like pilots. Did I lose
Dorothy?
You?
Dorothy. What's that?
What?
I said, why don't you learn to fly?
You.
No, I'm still here. I said, why don't you learn to fly?
I don't know if I feel called to that. At one point.
Okay.
I'm separated from my husband, but he has significant amount of financial resources. And at one point 10 years ago, we were flying all over the place. And I said his name, which I won't say on the air, for
honey,
his privacy. But I said,
honey.
You know what? Why don't
Hi, honey.
Honey,
like
why don't I get my pilot's license and let's get a private plane and share it with a few families? This is my idea because we fly so much and there's so much like germs on the airplane and inconveniences and blah blah blah. Wouldn't this be fun? And now with the masks, I mean, I was ahead of my time. I mean, I'm telling you, if I had my private pilot's license and we had a shared plane, how in the beautiful situation would I have been?
during the pandemic, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, the rich folks have all got private jets now. We can talk about how sexy private jets are. We're going to talk about that's a whole other avenue that we can explore. The sex of money is going to be a great thing to explore sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah.
But a private jet,
so
you
before,
know. Go ahead.
And we, I want to, and we don't have to do it right now, but I do want to, because I want to be useful on your show. I do want to touch on a few things. I don't want to just talk about the horrors of breast cancer and the skyrocketing rates and what causes it, but I also want to talk about known preventatives and known resources that are more in the functional care community. And again, this is not my specialty, but I'm going to touch on it because I want to encourage people to explore further on their own.
Okay.
Is that okay? Can we do that?
That's fine. Yeah. You can do anything you want.
Because
this show's
it's
open. I don't limit, because that's what the show's about.
Well, and if you look up anything breast related online, mm-hmm. the amount of hits you get on cancer, phenomenal. It's hard to find, people talking about the history of breasts or the culture of our breasts or, as an erogenous zone and how you can maximize that and just focus on them in sex, which is a very tantra thing. But, it's all about breast cancer. And so the medical industry, as you well know, it's multi-billion dollar, the chemo as a solution. So listen, let's create the problem with vaccines and toxins, and then let's create the solution, which is chemotherapy, which merely extends the life expectancy, does not cure cancer by any means. The radiation and chemo isn't really a cure. It's the recurrence rate is through the roof. But since the 50s, or a little before, we've had the Gerson Institute in Mexico with a huge cancer cure rate, success rate, right? And they are using these protocols that are tried and true, detoxing the body from juices.
Steve McQueen and Leachel comes to mind because he went to Mexico, but I don't think that helped him.
Well, so the Gerson Institute is pretty open that depends on the type of cancer and how far along it is, your own body's immune system going into it, which is why we need to start in childhood with the immune systems in babyhood and prenatal care, not waiting until there's already a problem, because we have obviously in this culture epidemic proportions of autoimmune. And a lot of people do not know they have it until their body gets a disease that they cannot fight, right? The immune system is designed to, punch, pow, bam, anything that comes along, or we wouldn't have survived for 2 million years as humans. But now we have an epidemic of people with immune systems, whether they know it or not, that really cannot do their job. So all cancer is in the body every day. We all have cancerous cells, and the immune system eats them up and gets rid of them. The healthy immune system immediately takes care of them. So what distracts the immune system from taking care of cancer cells? Sugar, right? Autoimmune from toxins, and I'm going to have to call out vaccines again. I hate to do it, and flu shots, but they are immunosuppressed.
Sunscreen for skin cancer.
Sunscreen is an interesting – so, again, read your ingredients on sunscreen. And if there's an ingredient you don't know what it is, go look at your material safety data or look it up online and really dig deep before you put it on your body, right? I think it's still debatable whether most people need sunscreen. I think this is up in the air. I think
– But I avoid the sun.
Yeah.
It's much easier. Prevention's better than cure.
Yes. So in recent years, we've had a huge body of knowledge that suggests that the rates of skin cancer are not just caused from the sun, they're multifactorial, and that there's a lot of body of evidence suggesting that a lot of the sunscreens actually contribute to skin cancer. So
that's why I was asking, because I had a melanoma. I'm speaking from experience here, and I had to have it cut out of my leg. It's the very place on my leg where I put all my sunscreen, like right in my calf. I had a job where I had to work outside a lot, and I had sunscreen every day. And thinking to myself, I see the connection. And so now I find it much easier just to not go out in the sun, not get sunburned, not have to worry about the sunscreen. And I've been fine. So, go figure.
Yeah, it is interesting. So there's a great body of evidence in functional nutrition and functional health and doctors who focus on reducing toxins and increasing natural ways to stay healthy. That sunscreen may contribute to skin cancers. And again, we have a wide range of skin types. So if you are a skin type that gets burned easily, you're probably going to want shade. You're probably going to want, just to limit your exposure to have little bits at a time. You still need the vitamin D, right? Speaking of vitamin D for immune system.
So go in the morning. Go in the morning before 9 o'clock.
Go in the evening.
Yeah,
I mean,
at five.
Humans are designed to siesta in the afternoon anyway. So the human body is designed for a siesta.
Mine is.
In the bright afternoon. In the bright afternoon sun.
This raises an interesting point, too. You know, back to our original breast topic here. Excuse me. Areas that are getting sunburned that don't normally get sunburned. Women who've never been topless, all of a sudden, I want the overall tan. You know, is that a good idea to get an area burnt that has never been burnt?
The burnt skin is always damaging. It's damaging for aging as well as for promoting vulnerable people and vulnerable areas on the skin, you know, little moles and things to become cancerous. So the burn is always bad, but little bits. You can definitely tan your breasts. Just let's go a little bit at a time.
Okay. I don't know why I was curious.
So
I had to ask.
Yeah, and so back to prevention, like you said, not burning. Right. And then the nutrition is huge. Like getting the additives out of the food, eating clean, eating, exercising, lots of filtered water, vibing high with a positive attitude. Look, there's so much research on mental state and emotional state and cancer. I mean, that's huge, right? There's a lot of research on trauma stored in the body, then later causing cancer. So working through trauma, through somatic movement therapy, like I teach, plug, and other healing modalities for emotional trauma. That's really big. I believe cancer is 100% avoidable. I believe in a really healthy, natural human state, it would be so rare, very rare, almost non-existent. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm coming to the conclusion that it was no coincidence that at the end of 2 years of massive depression, which actually was essential for me to do what I'm doing now, I needed to go through this and basically fix everything in my life, that it was at the end of that that I got, I found out the same week, I had both a fatal melanoma and I needed open heart surgery to fix a valve. And I found out the same week that I had both of these fatal conditions. It was a busy week. But it cured my depression because I thought, okay, now I can.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I've worked everything through. I was basically done with it. You know, I was coming out of it. And then these two things happened. And it's like it's all part of the plan, right? So I went through, you know, first of all, we had the melanoma taken out. Then I went into a heart surgery. 4 months later, I got my job out here in Florida. So I'm driving across the country 4 months after open heart surgery, you know, massively overweight because for some reason I gained weight like crazy because my blood flow had doubled, literally. Once they fixed the valve. So the heart surgery went great, but it screwed up everything else. And so it's been a very interesting health challenge. I'm still trying to lose some of the – there's like a little bit of residual weight, like about 40 pounds or so I still have to go. But once that's down, I'll be back to where I was before, before heart surgery, and you know, but just with a working heart this time, not one that's only pumping half the blood. And so it's a fascinating transition. But I have a feeling – and the more I talk to people, the more it seems that those two, you know, life-threatening events happen at the end of a mass depression where I was totally miserable. But that misery was necessary to, like I say, solve all the problems of all the conditioning and all the narcissistic abuse that from the day I was born. You know, so I went through this and I had to figure out that everything I'd been told was a lie. I had to redo everything. I did tons of research. It was my depression was incredibly productive. Because I was researching, I was looking through stuff, I was working stuff, never took a drug. Well, one pill one doctor gave me, I'd never been so sick in my life. The only time I was that sick was when I got a seasick pill when I was on the ocean. That's another story too. But the point of all this is that depression is good for you if you use it properly. And that's a whole other topic
right.
for psychologists.
It's
yeah.
a sign.
Yeah.
It's a sign that something needs to be attended to. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that you're pushing something away that will not be pushed away anymore and wants to be acknowledged, and you're going to need to work through it. Mm-hmm. And that's where the bravery comes in, right? How do you sit with emotion? How do you sit with a long-held
like
belief
hell.
Or a long-held trauma?
It's the most mentally and physically painful thing I can ever imagine, but it was necessary. I knew it was necessary, though. And that's it. For some reason, I knew it was necessary. I knew I had to go through this, and I knew
but
that coming
survivor.
Out the other end of it.
I mean, you're kind of just winning at life, I think.
No kidding. Well, I mean, I had to.
I mean, you're
I learned
a survivor.
Survival skills
you get
early.
Thrown something. You get thrown something, and you look at it. I mean, I feel this way from knowing you. The little I do is that you get thrown something. Uh-huh. You look at it. You say, "Boy, this sucks." Now, what am I going to do about it? And then you do what you need
Pretty
to
much.
Do.
Yeah.
Which is resilience, which is something that, gosh, I wish they taught in school versus.
How do you teach that? Why do I, know, I'm just a regular nerdy guy, right? Okay. I don't have, I'm not coordinated. You know, I play music because I can't do sports. You know, there's a lot of things, but I have this brain, you know, God gave me that's filled with ideas. That's my strength. That's my gift.
Well, I think we have survivors. I think we have some people who are survivors. And, and I also believe, and if you look at history, obviously, you know, this, the Holocaust survivors, like, why weren't they all depressed? Why weren't they all just suicidal and living under a bridge on drugs? And there's a lot of reasons that they weren't. And so it's not the trauma necessarily that creates psychologically damaging effects for life. I believe it's more, how is it reflected back to you? How does your family handle it? How is it interpreted for you by other adults? How do they help? You know, do you have anyone there that's mirroring for you? And bad things can happen to you as a child, but even one attached caregiver or one attached adult to help process is kind of life-saving. And then some people just naturally have a resilient personality. I believe that's true also.
I think it's a bit of both, though, because, like I say, my own family is not a place I could go for help. I mean, they were the problem. But there are always friends, you know, parents of friends, you know, scout folks and people, teachers, you know, various people I met along the way that I would gravitate towards adults that were who I wanted to be. You know, and they would help me. And then, you know, especially fathers of friends of mine in school were incredibly generous of their time talking to me. And they were just really, really decent people. And so, yeah, that's how, you know, and you sort of.
What a blessing.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
What a blessing.
But you find
because,
the people.
You know, it takes a village. It takes a village for children. Not what parent can't do at all. It takes community willing to talk to the child and support them, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's my constant thing to, when, you know, I meet younger folks, sort of say, you know, what's your adventure? What's your discovery? You know, where are you going? What's your goal? And that's one of the things we need to talk about too, because I find, I have a chance to work. I have a day job where I still get to work with some younger folks. And it's almost, you know, depressing that the lack of adventure they have, the lack of, you know, where's the new discovery? Where's the, you know, where are you going to sail off into the sunset and see what happens? Well, no, that's not really practical. I really got to stick around here. Oh, I really don't have anything to do. I'm just, you know, tired. And I just, you know, I was kind of muddling through. It's like, that's it. God, what happened to us? It's like communism. What people don't understand about communism, it's not that it's torturous and tyrannical. It is, especially if you're in a gulag. But the reason communism kills so many people is it's boring. They create the world's most boring place.
Boring,
there's no life, there's no colors, there's no advertising. Yeah.
Stress. Yeah.
Everything's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, stress is
I'm telling
stress
you,
too.
You're right.
But
you're
boredom
right about
creates
that.
Stress. Boredom creates stress, too. Boredom is a stress.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. I have to mention one thing. I cannot leave today without talking about this, because I'm talking about preventing breast cancer. We love the breasts. We want all the breasts to be beautiful, happy, and feel really
we
good about
do.
Themselves.
We certainly do. Come on, women. We're counting on you.
So you know, being aware of the plastic surgery and medical industry's influence on how we view breasts, that they should be full and large and up high all
no
the
implants.
Time. That's, I think,
no
an awareness.
Implants.
Much like the Viagra campaign also did the same thing to men in erection. We won't get into that. But just being aware of that. So once you're aware of that and aware of, you know, sometimes the lymph node restrictive qualities of underwire bras, being aware of that we are humans that are electrical. We conduct current. So wearing underwires can be damaging to the breasts. All this kind of thing is great to be aware of. But there is one really magical protein in the body. I don't know if you've heard of it, called galactin 3.
No.
And there's a lot of research on this, and it's legit. This is
sounds
legit.
Like something out of Star Trek. We're going to galactin 3.
Cool.
Oh, really? Okay.
Galactin 3. Okay, so we are going to galactin 3, and this is what we're going to talk about. So thousands of studies show this is an adhesive cell surface protein, and it actually protects cancers. So it's the number one driver of cancer progression and metastasis as well.
It protects cancer?
So it has a double role.
It protects cancer in your body?
Yes. But listen to what else it does. It is the initial alarm that controls your body's response to fight or flight. So when your body is stressed, feels like it's under attack, it produces more galactin 3, which in turn triggers inflammatory that fuel cancer and chronic diseases. This is huge. Why aren't we hearing more about it? Because it would sort of get, you know, the chemotherapy industry would suffer. There are now galactin 3 supplements that can reduce it. And you know what they've found? And this is, again, many studies, that regular meditation practice also reduces it and reduces the rate of cancer. So this is solid research, and I can post some of it. But there are supplements you can take that reduce it. There are also body and lifestyle practices to reduce it. The galactin 3 should be, you know, the word that everyone's talking about right now, because why wouldn't we want to prevent cancers? And now we know a major protein that causes it and is caused by stress. So we're talking about, you know, the pandemic and how the media treated it, and how Fauci treated it.
Does your body make it, or how does it get? It's a naturally occurring protein. Are there foods that reduce it, or you just have to reduce your stress, or how do you get it out of your body?
You reduce your stress, and there are foods actually that can reduce it. But I think it's very interesting that this study, 60 days of daily meditation practice, you had these heart disease patients and cancer patients significantly reduced levels of galactin 3. And meditation, you know, it's a lot of people view this as like, oh, you know, maybe I'll add that just because it might have this little lighthearted. What we're learning about meditation is huge. It's much more beneficial than we think, and that the benefits in health and lifestyle are significant enough that everyone should be practicing it really daily. If you're exercising, if you're eating well.
Because I've tried meditating. I either go to sleep or get bored because I'm like so ADHD. I don't have patience to meditate, but I can play about an hour and a half of wild electric guitar at night, and I can go for long bike rides where, you know, I'll go for a bike ride. You know, I do like a 15-mile bike ride, right? And I don't remember like the middle, you know, 80% of it because I'm thinking. So I go off into this world and I'm just biking and, you know, going off my world and having this huge, you know, internal dialogue, you know, discussing philosophy with myself and, you know, all this stuff happens. And to me, that's like meditation because I'll all of a sudden almost like wake up. It's like people who drive the same route every day, they don't know how they get there sometimes. That's almost like a meditation.
So there are meditative activities like swimming and things that you have to just really get out of your brain and out of your brain and into your body where you're focusing on your breath. Does not replace the actual sitting, the F down, closing your eyes, listening to your breath, and bringing your thoughts back when your thoughts begin to drift, bringing them back to your breath. If you were someone like me whose brain goes crazy, I've been meditating for years now, but I originally had a mantra. I always had a mantra because that's something my thoughts could say over and over versus having a blank mind, right? And my mantra was extremely uplifting, and it was calling on my divine source creator. It was asking for revelation. And I can't tell you the amount of times a life problem or a sticky situation, like within 5 to 10 minutes of meditating, it's so clear. And that's just one of the benefits. And so much research has shown that it actually increases your health completely and decreases cancers. And I want to touch on the foods. You asked about the foods, and I think we let it slip, and I was talking about so modified citrus pectin blocks galactin 3, modified citrus pectin, which is available in any supplement store, probably in Whole Foods, actually. But check
citrus,
your
– that's like
check
oranges, limes, lemons, and pectin is like what you get in apples, right?
Yes, but it's a specific in the supplements, they, you know, super concentrate it. So, so modified citrus pectin also removes heavy metals, which is very important also to have your heavy metals bound and excreted from the body. And there's a couple other supplements for heavy metals, but we can do another show on that. And then mushrooms. I love mushrooms. And I think you talked about Joe Rogan recently, who also seems to love mushrooms, but a couple specific ones.
Well, we have a contact. We have a friend of a friend who's connected to Joe Rogan. So I was going to tell Jonathan about this earlier. But, yeah, don't be surprised in the next month or so or two, you know, hopefully before the midterms, if we either he's on our show or we're on his show. Because I think once he finds out, you know, and I've written his show. I've written all these people for years. But, of course, you know, you don't get by the minions. They say, oh, citizen legislation, well, that's stupid. And they throw it out because they have no vision, right? So to get to the people that count, we need to actually have a contact that can explain in 30 seconds what we do here. Because it's a revolution. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. So I'm convinced that once
he's like a fan of mushrooms, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
I thought he was a fan of, I've heard this, don't quote me on this, but I thought he's mentioned them before, but I think maybe the benefits of psilocybin and the hallucinogenics done in microdose. Now, unfortunately, those are not shown to prevent breast cancer, but Skullcap and astragalus, yes. Phytonutrient compounds protect breast cells. They do. Tons of research on this. And now medicinal mushrooms are available everywhere. They used to be hard to find, and now they're much easier to find. My recommendation is find a mushroom grower in your area. We have one at our farmer's market, and they actually make the powders. And so they're fresh and they're local. And I know their practices, so I trust them. And so I get my mushrooms from them. And you can put it in your coffee in the morning. It's quite lovely. Tastes good.
Yeah, I came up with a word that is this fascinating. I came up with a word that apparently a lot of other folks have thought of before too. The pharmacy, F-A-R-M, you know, A-C-Y.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So yeah, you want to go to your pharmacy. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was original, but then I found a comic, so I can't take credit for it anymore. It was good for a week though. Anyway, but yeah, so you want to go to your, so this is really the secret. You've got to get to know your local farm product place, your local farmer's market, your local produce people, and learn about the foods that, I mean, I have an entire computer file on foods that are healthy. And apparently everything I eat, you know, grows hair, makes me more intelligent and extends my life. So I got plenty of long hair, you know, and I think I'm pretty smart, but we'll see. And life, yeah, listen, I'm doing okay. So, you know, I'm pretty happy. You know, most people my age are retiring and slowing down. And it's like, hey, I got a new career. I'm ready to go. This is fun. So I'm getting more energetic, which is kind of weird. I think
I am too. I feel like I'm anti-aging. I feel like the more I discover about the truth of health, the more I discover about the truth of health, and I will say the more I meditate, and I do Joe Dispenza's manifestation meditation where you get super positive energy, you get real positive. Mm-hmm. I swear I'm anti-aging, and I can say that to you.
Or you mean reverse aging. You're actually reverse aging.
I think I'm reverse aging. Yeah,
I think so too. Yeah, we should talk more about that because that's a brand new topic that has suddenly hit me. It's like why, you know, when my friends are getting, you know, arthritis and they don't have the flexibility in their fingers, I'm suddenly able to play my guitar faster than I ever have. Convinced for years that I couldn't play fast. Now I'm doing it in my 60s, you know, playing like a shredder. Where the hell did that come from? That's not natural.
There's so
I love
much
it.
On aging. We're not. There's so much on aging we're not told that we're lied about.
So the book's out.
There's a huge industry, anti-aging cream industry, medications and all this. But the truth is, it's positive vibration, how you think about life. There's certain movements you can do that are anti-aging, and that research goes back hundreds of years, and we can talk about that. But there's certain actual body movements you can do that reverse your aging, and it's what you put in your body and put on your skin. So you hang out with Tai Chi is one of them, but there's also some yoga poses and there's some spinning. I mean, it's going to sound crazy, but you create a vortex by spinning. I don't know. That's going to sound
crazy. As in a whirling dervish? I don't know if I'm part dervish.
As in a whirling dervish. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
This has been fun.
Kind of exciting things.
Yeah.
So anything else on the breasts we need to cover? I mean, there's so much.
we got it diverted like we usually do on all kinds of other things. But yeah,
we did. I love talking about why the breasts are erotic, why they're covered up. You know, is it really fair?
Well, would they be erotic if they're not covered up? You know, I mean,
how are we? And because that goes to breastfeeding also. So if the breasts are seen as erotic and they're seen to be covered up and shamed, you know, what happens to our breastfeeding population? Now they're hiding in closets. They've got a wrap over them in public. The baby can't even breathe. All of that needs to go away. So we need a little happy medium with, you know, I feel like we might have room for more breast exposure that's non-sexual in our culture. That might be actually a positive thing. I mean, you know,
well,
we can all kind of think about that.
Too. You know, you see, you know, women breastfeeding. It's like, okay, wow, hey, that's great. You know, keep the kid healthy. That's a good thing. You know,
you
and then you see
so
like a woman in a sexy
hormones.
Outfit. But there's a difference between you know, sexy and nutrition. You know, and most of us I think make that distinction. You know, so I don't.
But
that shouldn't,
you know
that shouldn't
you
be
would
an
think
issue,
so, right?
Yeah.
You're a reasonable
yeah.
person, and you would think so. But the amount of women I know who've been breastfeeding shamed in public is through the roof, and it's probably
by
less
women
than
or men.
Santa Monica when I.
By women or men?
I hate to say this, but it's usually by women. Now, a man will do it sometimes, make a scornful comment. But so because I breastfed, I did extended breastfeeding, quite extended. And I had a great support group of friends in Santa Monica. Even there in like progressive Santa Monica, we would sit together on a bench and like feel like we had to cover up. And then we talk about it like, gosh, the baby's pushing the blanket off and, you know, we said to each other, this is stressful. This should never be stressful. And there are cultures where if you are breastfeeding, people will come up and praise you and clap and like they're so excited to see you breastfeed. Yes. The sumo culture, which I don't have time to get into today, but like the sumo wrestlers, they brag about how long they were breastfed. It's a bragging point. Like, my
how
mom
long
breastfed
is long?
Me till seven.
What,
my mom
seven?
Breastfed me till eight. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's
that
cultures
doesn't seem
where if you...
natural. Do kids
well,
need to
it
be breastfed
is.
That long?
Breast... Okay, Greg, the average age that kids breastfed from in human history was 6 to 7. And that is when you stop producing
really?
Lactase dehydrogenase. So the enzyme that breaks down milk stops being produced starting about age 5, which gives us biological evidence. That is when a lot of babies and small children start to be weaned. Around age 5, they start to be weaned. Yeah. And then it's done for comfort as well. So 6 or 7 in human history is absolutely normal.
Wow.
It's just our culture who decided that women's attractive breasts are for men and they're an erotic. More than they are.
So that's it. You got to make the distinction.
Natural
nutrition, baby nutrition, and adult fun. I mean, this same breast, you know, two totally different things. You know, and it's you got to make that distinction. Otherwise, you're not.
Yeah.
I don't know, you're kind of weird, I think.
Or you're okay with it all going together, like that you don't have to. That the breast is an amazing organ that serves so many purposes and is so life-giving, and that's one of the reasons it's sexually attractive, because it's so beautiful. Like the lips, you know, the lips are for eating, but they're also for kissing, and they're also for, I mean, there's so many uses. I don't know. Sometimes I just feel
dual,
like...
dual body parts. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, we have so many issues in our
some
head.
Some are for fun, some are useful,
make ourselves
and some do
crazy.
Both. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, what is a breast? Let's is it fat, lymph nodes? What is it?
Well, and I have to sign off
milk
in a minute,
glands?
But to wrap it up. Yes. So about 30 mammary glands. I mean, that's a ballpark, surrounded by fatty tissue and some connective tissue and smooth muscle with a nipple that helps it get erect. Very exciting.
Yeah, a bunch of nerve endings.
There's
so,
a lot
you know.
Of fatty tissue, but you'll have some people that you'll see speak about the breast will say, oh, it's just a bag of fat, which is completely not true. Like they're sort of disparaging the breast. Like, why is it seen so erotic? It's just a bag of fat. That's not true at all. It's a very complicated, beautiful organ and much more than a bag of fat. Very sensitive to cancers because the cells change rapidly there and the fat in the breast is more tendency to absorb estrogen and other chemicals. So one of the reasons it's a little more sensitive.
Interesting.
I know, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the things we talk about is fascinating. You never know where we're going to go on this.
How long could we talk about boobies on the air? I think I could do it all day.
Oh, I could talk about them forever. You know, hey, listen, I appreciate a good rack. I'm not going to lie. You know, it's kind of fun.
Who doesn't? It is so fun.
But here's the thing,
too.
It still comes down, and I'll say this, you know, with my dying breath, it still comes down to personality. You can have the best rack in the world. And if you're an idiot, I'm not going to talk to you for very long. And that's so for women out there, if this is the only thing you're worried about, you know, especially for women that have guys pressuring them, that's probably something we should talk about next time. You know, if your guy's pressuring you to get implants, dump the guy. Just stop this nonsense. You know, be who you are.
Yeah.
Makes me mad.
Yeah.
You know?
He's completely submerged into cultural pressures. He's not educated on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I 100% agree. Now, yeah,
he's
going to
leave you anyway.
We can talk about
he's
going to
make you do that. He'll leave you anyway. So don't even bother. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you want them and he's willing to pay for them, that's another story. I'm not going to be opposed to that. But, you know, again, think hard about it. Like we talked about in the Facebook post, I believe the fat augmentation, if you're going to augment your breasts, try to find a surgeon that goes and does the fat, your own body fat. I mean, it's probably a healthier alternative than the silicone. There are many that do it. A little more expensive.
Well, that's kind of weird. I guess we're going to have to do a butt show now or two, aren't we? We'll have to talk about the perfect butt.
Sure. And why do we even like them? I mean, come on.
You know, you have to tell. Well, see, I got to know what – I'm curious what women check out with guys, too. So we said chest, and we – so that's another show, too, for the guys that are listening.
Yeah.
You know, they want to know what women are checking out in us when we're not looking and they're sneaking a peek. So I'm just curious. You know, we all do it. We might as well talk about it here.
Let's do it. I love it.
Yeah. Contact information yet or Facebook or anything else you want to
I'm
share?
On Facebook, Dorothy Diana. I'm Dorothy Diana on Facebook, and I'm getting a lot of requests from people associated with your show, so it's interesting. And then they can always message me with specific questions if they if they'd like to. I'm always open to answering anything specific.
Well, they can call
about
in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can call in during your report, as far as I'm concerned, unless you have specific stuff that you want to cover first and then take calls. You know, you can always do that too. But I'd love to have people call in. I wonder if they're shy. Would that be this would be like therapy. You know, it's a part of your sex therapy to call us and talk about things openly in front of, you know, audiences in Azerbaijan and Chile and, you know, China and whoever else is listening, Iceland. We're heard in a lot of different places. It's really kind of fascinating. It's a big world out there, and we cover most of it.
I love it. Well, it's been a joy and pleasure, Greg, as always, and I look forward to next week, and I'm sure I'll hear from you online a bit here and there in our fun little chats. So.
Yep. And we have to go to a cafe, you know, just and talk to people that are on computer. I mean, I want to do that. I think that'd be a great idea.
Yes. I bet we can distract them if we begin a conversation about breasts. I bet they might pay attention and start talking to us, perhaps.
Yeah, but they'll look at us when we're not looking at them. They'll try and hide the fact that they're listening to us. They'll pretend to be working, but they'll actually be listening. And that's going to be even funnier. I love our chats. I really do. Thank you so much.
It's
we'll
a plan.
Do it next
Let's
week.
Put that in the file.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Well, have a great day, and thank you again.
Thank you, too. Wow, the things we cover on the show never ceases to amaze me.
I love it.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us, and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Great Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is greatcare.com. That's G-R-A-I-T-H, care. You can email them at greatcare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. From addiction to achievement. That is the story of Mike Lindell. It started with MyPillow and now goes to MyCoffee. Action Radio is proud to be an affiliate of MyPillow. Our discount code is the same for all our product affiliates, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws. MyPillow pillows are guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. Action Radio is guaranteed to be the most controversial show you will ever hear. Check out their products with our discount code at mypillow.com/WYL. That's mypillow.com/WYL. Or order now by calling 1-800-544-8939. That's 1-800-544-8939. Sleep well, so you can wake up and hear Action Radio live. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news! Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. from the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Cool. Well, this has been way too much fun this morning. I've definitely enjoyed our two conversations with Dorothy Diana and Jonathan Mosley. And so now it's just me. So Heather, I don't know, she's a busy author and she's got a book coming out. So I understand she probably has a ton more things to do. So I'll talk to her about our schedule reports and things like that. She's writing a book. She's written a book called Rebel Keto. So she's just a rebel in general. So we talk about all kinds of rebellious stuff. It's really fun. And so hopefully we'll have her back on soon or not. I don't know yet. But it just depends on things. And I guess folks get busy. You know, Shelby is taking some time off. She's busy with her business. She's our cruise and travel reporter. So it happens. You know, people come and go. And, you know, it's because we all have our busy lives. I mean, this is my life, so I'm not going anywhere. I'll be here. But, you know, where they say the creek don't rise, and you know, and the good Lord willing, and we shall be carrying on here at Action Radio, which I'm anticipating some huge growth here in the not too distant future. So we're going to break through all the censorship, we're going to break through the restrictions, break through all the limitations that are out there that are presently holding us back, and we're just going to go slamming on through. So now we got a little chance to talk, and I've got some things that always bother me about 9/11. And so we talk about them, and I got some great comments from people, you know, on Facebook. And so this is where I propose a lot of stuff. And of course, the big question is, you know, where are the airplane wreckage pictures? Where are the tails? Where are the engines? Where are the wings? You know, these planes that went into buildings. And I think we always assumed that when these airplanes went in, that they either disintegrated, caught fire, melted, you know, collapsed in the building, were unrecognizable. But now I'm kind of wondering about that, especially since there's no airplane pictures of the Pentagon where an airplane supposedly crashed into the outside of the building. And so, of course, you know, anybody who objects to what I'm saying right now, they're using the two, you know, what they think are the most useful words in the English language, conspiracy theorist. Okay. So if you say things like this, then they're going to call you a conspiracy theorist. Well, you can say that all you want. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference to me. I'm gonna ask my questions anyway. And so that's what this is all about. This is about asking questions. You know, do we have the answers? No. But sometimes the questions are, in fact, the answers themselves. Like, where are the airplanes? You know, where are the planes that crashed into these towers? You know, and the thing that came to mind, I didn't really relate this until this morning when I was thinking about it. Normally what happens when an airplane has a tragedy, a crash or a bomb like the Lockerbie, the Pan Am flight, or things like that. They piece the airplane back together. They put it in a hangar and they take apart. They put it all together. Well, they don't take it apart. It's already apart. But they take the pieces and they see how they all fit. They look for in the case of TWA Flight 800, you know, missile residue. Of course, they don't tell you it's there, but that was a missile. I'm convinced of that too. But what's interesting, the Lockerbie Scotland flight, which was blown up with a bomb, I think, placed on by a Libyan terrorist, set to go off over Scotland, and TWA Flight 800, the one that there was an entire Navy exercise going on below it, and they're all firing off missiles, and then they say, well, it couldn't have been a missile. It must have been the center fuel tank exploded on this 747, but hasn't exploded on any other 747, you know, in the 30-plus years they've been operating, or 40 years. By, what is it now? It's 1970? 50 years these things have been operating. They've never had a center fuel tank explode, except on this one, which happened to be flying around a Navy missile exercise. Yeah, right. But what's interesting about that is that they brought that airplane up from the bottom of the ocean. So they went to all the trouble to bring Flight 800 pieces up from the bottom of the ocean, put them in a warehouse and spread them all out and do a two-year investigation to find out what exactly happened, and then they lied to you. Okay, so why wouldn't they take the airplane pieces out of go through the 9/11 buildings and bring those out, put them together in a warehouse, and lie to us about that? Well, they didn't. I don't think anybody's ever found the airplane parts. Where did the airplanes go? You know, this is an interesting question. You know, do I think the whole thing was fake? No, those buildings definitely blew up. The reason they came down, though, is what we're all questioning. You know, why would something, you know, if an airplane went into the middle, the top, you know, third or the top, quarter of the two big towers, Tower 1, Tower 2, the World Trade Centers, why would it collapse from the bottom? You know, I mean, it looked like it was some of the pictures. You can see it looks like it collapsing from the top, but I'm not sure anymore. What I remember this thing kind of collapsing from the bottom, which would indicate, you know, demolition charges. Well, then people say, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, you're saying the government did it. Well, it's kind of interesting that the government had the Patriot Act all ready to go, and there's evidence that they wrote it years ahead of time. So do I think the government, you know, conspired to fly airplanes into the World Trade Center and blow it up and have those buildings collapse? No, I don't think that. And the reason I don't think that is I think that the people who would do something like that, although they wouldn't mind doing it, they wouldn't mind killing 3,000 Americans for their own political agenda, I think that they would think that they would be too easily caught. So they probably caught wind that, so you know, either Osama bin Laden or more likely, when Claire Lopez was on the show, she was a CIA officer, you know, Middle East specialist, expert, one of the top experts in the world on the Middle East, said that it was Iran that engineered that whole operation. Yeah, they used Saudi nationals, but it was really an Iranian, you know, operation to, you know, destroy the U.S. and damage us and credibility and, you know, just hit a blow, you know, fly airplanes into our buildings. Okay, very possible. It is very possible that they would engineer that and do that and pull that off and fly the airplanes into the towers. I believe they were capable of doing that. Do I believe that our government found out about it ahead of time? Yeah, pretty possibly. I mean, it's kind of hard to hide something like that, especially when, you know, Saudi students, you know, are going to flight school saying, I want to take off and fly, but I don't want to learn how to land. And that was reported to the FBI and to the FAA. You know, and they say, well, we never got those reports. Oh, really? None of them? That doesn't make sense either. So I think, you know, going through the logic and the reason filter that I put through everything, it makes sense that once they discovered the plot, that they used it to their own advantage to create the Patriot Act and the surveillance state and the, you know, basically the FBI, KGB, and the Gestapo that Merrick Garland runs at the Department of Justice, you know, based on something that made all Americans fearful. Oh, we got to stop the war on terrorism. Well, let's go to Iraq, you know, even though they came from Iran. It was, you know, run by Iran with Saudi Arabian, you know, people. So what do? We attack Iraq and Afghanistan. Why? Well, Afghanistan might be a haven for terrorists. Well, of course it is. You know, so it's Pakistan and a bunch of other countries. Doesn't mean we go attack them all. And you're not going to find them anyway. They blend in with the people. Okay, so you know, stop them at the border, stop them coming in, stop them, you know, from flying in and doing everything else like that. I mean, that's why we have intelligence, to stop that kind of stuff. But once they found out about it, I think my guess is they probably found out about it, let it happen, and used it with possibly demolition charges to bring down the buildings and to create a surveillance state. That makes perfect sense to me. Thinking like a government operative, thinking like a deep state person that thinks that everybody is as corrupt and criminal and treasonous as they are. Jonathan and I were talking about that earlier. That's why they're having so much trouble with the January 6th people, because January 6th people are just, you know, basically decent, honest citizens, Trump supporters. They're not going to admit to crimes they didn't do. Yeah, they were there for an insurrection. They were there to overthrow the government. How do you overthrow the government standing beside a statue taking a selfie? that stretches, you know, is way beyond credibility. So anyway, so these are the questions. Questions going through my head. You know, where are the wings? Where are the tail? You know, where in a crash, you always have the tail. You have something. Something from the airplane, something big. Seats, wings, engines, you know, something. Except in this case. And the one that really, the Pennsylvania one, same thing. I asked on Facebook, has anybody got a picture of the airplane, you know, parts? Where is it? Where'd it go? You know, the Pennsylvania one, I don't think, and I have to go back and check that again. I don't, you know, there may, you know, where are the parts of, where's the airplane that crashed in the field? And you know, those courageous people, you know, that screamed, let's roll. And they used one of the food carts to try and break into the airplane cockpit and stop them from being killed. And unfortunately, they didn't get in there. And the terrorists, you know, flew them into the ground. But that's a question. Where's that airplane? What warehouse is it in? You know, what do they, you know, how do they know what went on in the airplane if they don't even have the airplane parts? You know, I mean, there are survivors to tell about it, which is kind of convenient too. You know, where are the survivors? Did anybody survive on any of those airplanes? I don't think so. And it makes sense. How would you survive flying into a building or flying into the Pentagon or flying into, you know, crashing into a field? But actually, the field is probably more likely that somebody should have survived that. I'd be curious. I don't know if they did or not. I mean, I'm not as well versed on that, but I'm just wondering where the airplane is. Okay, so all these questions are going on. And then, of course, there's building number 7. What happened to building number 7? Where'd that go? You know, why did that collapse? That wasn't hit by an airplane. oh, it caught fire from the debris that was flying through the air. Oh, really? You could bring down a whole building? The building's going to collapse because of some fires? I don't think so. Or the idea of the World Trade Center, the steel was so so weak that it melted, you know, and away it went. Well, in that case, every time an office had a fire, the building should collapse, but they don't. So this is a lot of things, which brings us to the Murrah building, you know, the building in Oklahoma, which looks like a very strange explosion pattern for a truck bomb. You would think a truck, you know, blasted to radiate out, you know, in a spherical, conical kind of shape. Yeah, this building seems to have straight edges where it collapsed straight down. Well, that's interesting. You would think that the impact on the roof from the bomb at street level would be far less than the impact at street level. Well, apparently not. It looks like the impact on the roof of the Murrah building is exactly the same as the impact at street level, which from a truck bomb is impossible. So the questions, like I said, I don't know the answers. I don't know, but something is very strange, which brings us to Pearl Harbor. Okay, Gary, how'd you get to Pearl Harbor? Well, for the same reason that I think our government knew the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor and they let that happen so we'd get in World War II. I think the same reason that they let the terrorists blow up the World Trade Center so it could become a police state and the permanent war class could get us back in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, spending trillions of dollars and killing thousands of people, you know, including us. That makes sense to me. How about Benghazi? What was Benghazi? Well, Benghazi was a gun running operation by Hillary Clinton and the State Department to get guns to, I think, ISIS so they could attack Assad of Syria. You know, she bragged about, well, we killed, you know, Muammar Gaddafi, and then we're going to kill Assad too. Well, that's big bragging. And what happens? What happens was somebody objected to that, and they attacked our embassy in Benghazi to, I guess, stop the gun running, and Christopher Stevens gets killed, gets murdered. But they didn't send the troops to go after them. In fact, I've got the recordings of the stand-down orders. I've got a let's see how long that interview is. That might be worth playing right now. That's kind of a one of my classic. I keep these interviews from WEBY around just for occasions like this. WEBY, challenge. Where's my Benghazi? 16 minutes. I might just play that. It might be kind of interesting to do that on this particular. These are calls. These are just callers to my show when I was on WBY. I got some articles here, and I post these at the Action Radio Special Investigations page. The first one was the USA Patriot Act was planned before 9/11. It's from a website called Global Issues. You know, Jennifer Van Bergen, 20th of May, 2002. So this is about 8 months, 8-9 months after September 2001. Okay, so she's already saying that, 8 months later, they're already talking about the Patriot Act was planned. It says, many people do not know that the USA Patriot Act was already written and ready to go long before September 11th. Recent criticism of Bush's administration that he had received warnings only weeks before September 11th had made it more important to understand the origins of the USAPA. That would be the USA Patriot Act, I imagine. The USA Patriot Act, well, there it is. The so-called Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct the Terrorism Act of 2001, also known as the USAPA. That's a hell of a long name. But, I mean, guys, I mean, what happened to brevity being the source of wit? Guess not. It says, was enacted in the immediate wake of 9/11, riding a wave of fear. Now, how do they have that act? You would think that if you're going to have a USA Patriot Act, and didn't think of this until just now, too, something that complex, you'd think you'd have to have hearings and studies, and it would be a couple of years before they'd have a good act, unless they had it ready to go. Well, if they had it ready to go, and they wanted to have the maximum impact, you know, and we've got terrorists that are willing to blow up the World Trade Center, you know, flying in from Saudi Arabia, sponsored by Iran, you know, don't let a crisis go to waste. Okay, so now it makes sense. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Anyway, so the USAPA was enacted in the immediate wake of 9/11, riding a wave of fear that spread over the nation. This act has caused much concern amongst civil rights advocates, for good reason. It's got nothing to do with civil rights. The administration, however, responded to such concerns by calling critics unpatriotic. Oh, there you go. That's it. So now, it's funny. Patriotism is a bad word under the current insurrection. So you got a bunch of people who stole the White House, who say the patriotism, you know, is a horrible thing. It's really interesting. Let me see if I can. I don't know. This stuff just cracks me up. Let me see if I can get my. As soon as I'm going to the newsroom, I'll pay my newsroom sound effect here. Dateline USA Patriot Act, Action Radio. September 12th. There we go. Okay, so White House spokesman Ari Fleischer said, Friday, I think that, anytime anybody suggests or implies to the American people that this president had specific information that could have prevented the attacks on our country on September 11th, that crosses the lines. Well, you notice when he says that, he didn't say that he didn't have information. He just said anybody who suggests or implies that is crossing the lines. What particular line is that? Truth? Is that the line you don't want us crossing? You know, so Ari Fleischer, great, the non-denial. Well, you can't say that. You know, that's how you can tell a guilty person. You know, innocent person, when you accuse them of something, they say, I didn't do that. What, are you crazy? No, I didn't do that. A guilty person will say, well, how dare you accuse me of that? Let's say you know they're guilty. And they don't answer the question. They have some modicum of truth left in them. They don't answer the question. So they accuse the accuser. And that's what Ari Fleischer just did. Anybody who suggests or implies this, you know, that the president had information, that's crossing the lines. In other words, you know, how dare you accuse me of this? Easily, because you look guilty as hell right now. Kind of interesting. All right, let's skip down through all the comments and get to some more stuff. It says, these may be mere coincidences. Time magazine just released a lengthy article by Michael Elliott, How the U.S. Missed the Clues, in which he states, last summer, the White House suspected that a terrorist attack was coming, but four key mistakes kept the U.S. from knowing what to do. Oh, really? Whether the administration could have anticipated 9/11 or not, the proponents of the USAPA, the Patriot Act, were waiting to go long before that day. Similar anti-terrorism legislation was enacted in the 1996 Anti-Terrorism Act. It was during the Clinton administration. Did we have a terrorist act then? I don't think so. Other than the Clinton administration itself, well, Waco. What was Waco? Anti-Terrorism Act, which, however, did little to prevent the events of 9/11. And many problems had either been declared unconstitutional or were about to be repealed when 9/11 occurred. Well, now, isn't that interesting? So, in other words, it was the acts that were unconstitutional were avoided, you know, before 9/11. But after 9/11, it's Constitution. Who needs it? We'd rather be safe. That's why safety is so dangerous. Nothing more dangerous than safety. Looking back at the 1996 Anti-Terrorism Act, Dempsey and Cole declared that much touted gains in law enforcement powers under the acts produced no visible concrete results in the fight against terrorism. Wasn't that interesting? Well, that's because the Patriot Act has nothing to do with terrorism. They're not looking for terrorists. They're looking for you, the American citizen. They're looking for American patriots. You know, so if you want to put it bluntly, the American Patriot Act, the whole purpose of the American Patriot Act is to get rid of patriots by making them out to be terrorists. MAGA white supremacist, the greatest enemy of our democracy, even though we're not a democracy. It's quite fascinating, actually. Anyway, so let's see, I read that. They add that the principles espoused in the act were shown in case after case to be both unconstitutional and ineffective in the fight against terrorism. And importantly, the authors comment that the United States government has not shown that the expanded powers that is asserted with the U.S. Patriot Act are necessary to fight terrorism. Well, that makes sense. Dempsey and Cole, these people who looked into this, trace the origins of the national security trend back to the intolerant approaches of the 1950s, the Cold War, when association with communist or anarchist groups, which are polar opposites, by the way, was made a ground for exclusion and deportation. Well, that's true. Yeah, we had to answer whether you're a communist or not. You didn't have to say whether you're an anarchist or not. I remember that. But then when you become a citizen, at least you did in 1981, when I did, you had to declare whether you were a communist or not. So I said, no, I'm not a communist. Oh, interesting. It's funny, I was about to go to a communist country shortly thereafter, which is kind of interesting, too. All right, anyway, so the article goes on, but you get the idea. There's another one here, too, which is kind of interesting, I found, from, are you ready? The Nation of Islam. Okay, so the Nation of Islam has a great article, Nation of Islam Research Group. That's Louis Farrakhan, folks. February 12th, 2017. The smoking gun of 9/11, the Building 7 implosion. Well, you got a problem with Louis Farrakhan? I do. Yeah, he's a racist, sexist, he's anti-Semite, hates Jews, hates white people. But he might be right in this case. It's kind of interesting, right? So the Nation of Islam Research Group on February 12th, 2017, written by NOI Research, that's N-O-I. I'm not sure what – that's Nation of Islam Research. So we don't have an – we don't have an article author. Said, although it received little media attention at the time, the third worst structural building failure in modern history occurred on September 11th, 2001. World Trade Center Building 7 – was a 47-story, steel-framed, fire-protected, high-rise office building located about a football field's length from the World Trade Center North Tower. Unlike the Twin Towers, WTC, that's World Trade Center 7, was not hit by an aircraft. Yet, it fell to the ground suddenly, displaying the classic signatures of explosive-controlled demolition. In other words, they set charges in the bottom and it fell straight down. So you got a problem here, folks. You got a question. You got two towers that hit by airplanes and collapse, and then you got a building that wasn't hit by an airplane and collapsed. Well, that's interesting. They never quite explained that, except by these bogus. Well, there, you know, it says the explosive evidence was ignored, mishandled, and are covered up by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, the NIST, the federal agency tasked with explaining its unprecedented destruction. It says here, although Building 7 was never hit by an airplane and had only isolated pockets of fires on about 10 floors, it suddenly imploded, coming down neatly, symmetrically, and completely at 5:20 p.m. The official story, according to NIST, is that WTC, World Trade Center, 7 collapsed due to normal office fires, which created a new phenomenon. Really? How can something normal create something new? Call me crazy. I'm just looking at the words here, all right? In high-rise fires, it says in high-rise fires, destruction due to thermal expansion of steel beams leading to the progressive collapse of about 9 floors. Well, that's interesting. This ultimately caused the failure of column number 79, which is followed within seconds by all the rest. So a normal fire produced a thermal expansion. Well, that's not a normal effect of steel beams. So in other words, the steel beams from a normal fire got so hot that they suddenly collapsed and the whole building came down neatly, uniformly, like a demolition charge. Okay. Yeah, guys, that doesn't hold any water. And here's another interesting story, too. The passport in the ruins. Uh-oh. The claim was that the passport found in the ruins of the World Trade Center was planted. No, I don't think it was planted. I think it was probably from, you know, very possibly one of the terrorists. But since nobody identified, you know, the terrorists and cross-referenced that with his passport, I don't think we'll ever really know. But just as this is background, a passport belonging to Saddam al-Sukami, very Saudi Arabian sounding name, and this picture looks very Saudi, one of the terrorists on board Flight 11 was found moments before the World, oh, so they do know who he is, okay, was found moments before the World Trade Center 2 South Tower collapsed and given to a detective from the NYPD. And we've got a nice little article, nice little video from CNN saying, yeah, I've listened to the video. It says, yep, that's where it's found. Okay, that's the passport in the ruins. So there's a passport that's mixed in with this too. So again, these stories quite fascinating. But I can't find a picture of an airplane, a major airplane part, directly connected to any of these buildings. Not one. Not in the Pentagon, not in the Pennsylvania Field, not in the either the World Trade Center towers, and certainly number 7 down on its own. Now the FBI has pictures. If you go to the FBI website, the vault, 9/11 attacks and investigation stuff. So they have 3 pictures of airplane parts, but those could be any airplane crash. Nothing relates them to 9/11. And then we get another couple more articles here. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I want to go into these articles. They're in the Action Radio Special Investigations page. But the thing, yeah, maybe I'll take these up tomorrow because these are big, and they talk about the Patriot Act and some other things. Let me, since it's also the anniversary of Benghazi, let me play a couple of very interesting phone calls. And I should probably do this every year. It's probably the only time I should do this. But there are a lot of people who suspect that the reason we didn't rescue Glenn Stevens and some of the other folks, was it Glenn Stevens? I'm going to get my names mixed up. Chris Stevens. Chris Stevens was the ambassador. Glenn, I should know their names. I'm sorry. I apologize to the families for not having their names handy. But the 4 people that died, the Marines that defied orders and went to go save Chris Stevens, the ambassador, and some of the other folks there. So Glenn Doherty, I got these names will come to mind. So anyway, they died. They were killed in the attack, which was not a protest. It was an attack. And what was interesting was we had forces in Aviano, that's in Italy, all ready to go rescue them. I mean, they plan for this, they train for this. It's like the military has amazing resources. They plan, they have contingency plans, they have rescue plans, they have all these different plans, but they never get to use them. Because you got politicians like Barack Obama that said, oh, don't rescue them. That might make it look like an attack when we really want to convince people it's a protest. So they're willing to sacrifice lives to, you know, to save face. It's kind of crazy. Anyway, so let's talk about, this was, you know, this was, I've got this from September 13th. Of 2017, I got these calls. And so that would have been, let's see, when was the Benghazi attack? It was like a couple of years after the initial attack, 2001. Anyway, let me play you this. I haven't played this for a while. But these are calls to my station, WBY, so you hear phone numbers and station identification. That's not us. We're here at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. But this will be kind of an interesting thing for you to listen to, that is more than 9/11 than just 9/11. There's 9/11 Benghazi, there's 9/11 there, there's the Oklahoma building. There's all these different things that are going on that nobody's telling us the truth about. Now, we don't know what the truth is, but we know we're not being told the truth. And that, I guess, is a start. So I'll play this for you, and that'll probably do it for us for today. Back in a little bit. I definitely want to get into this story right here. There's a lot of news breaking around Benghazi, which is one of the most disgusting and disturbing incidents because I believe it was entirely preventable. It was a total screw-up by the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton at state. Whether it was intentional or just incompetent, I'm not sure, but there's definitely criminal negligence involved. And so there's a lot of things happening, breaking. Fox News has a big exclusive story on that. The big reporters, Catherine Herridge, Pamela Brown, and Sid Upson, have published a big report, and it is fascinating. So apparently these two guys, Brad Owens and Jerry Torres, are now talking about all the things that happened. They were pressured by the State Department not to talk. They tried to get a position there to be the security force in Benghazi. They were turned down. They had this little company in Wales that nobody's ever heard of try and do it, probably their buds. They didn't even have guns. You know, the security force didn't have guns, so they go from the security force to greeters at that point pretty much. So they couldn't stop a terrorist attack. And then that whole thing about the video. I remember doing some research on that right when it came out, and because I was curious how many views they had. And I don't know if you can do that now, but I think you could do it then. You could check back on the history of a video and see how many views there were. And if I remember, either I did this or someone else, or I found it somewhere, but I seem to remember there were only about 150 views of that video in the days before the Benghazi attack, the one that the alleged video that supposedly caused the Muslim world to revolt and attack our folks at Benghazi. And so, yeah, not a really popular thing. Now, that story has gone. That's been scrubbed from the web. I haven't seen that one for years, but seems to me I remember that's very, very few views. So they found this obscure video. And I don't know, I wonder if that guy's still in jail, too. I'll have to look that up. The guy that made the video. I said, well, you're responsible for Benghazi. No, he's not. He made a video. Get over it. All right. Let's get into some of the details on this. And if you have Benghazi information, stories, especially we have such a strong military area, if you know, I mean, know of a stand-down order that was given, or if you know of particular orders that kept any kind of military away from the Benghazi embassy there, then I'd be curious about that. I think it was a consulate, actually. Yeah. Let's get into some of the stories here. So security at the State Department's, this is the Fox News story, State Department's Benghazi compound was so bad that another contractor was brought in to clean up the mess just 2 weeks before the 2012 attack. And they were later pressured to keep quiet by a government bureaucrat under then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Let's see if I can find her name. Her name is down here somewhere. I should get to that in just a bit. Here we go. Jan Vizintaner. I don't know who this Jan Vizintaner is, but anyway, she's the one who said, State Department contracting officer, basically said, don't talk to the media. So she's going to be real hot water, too, so we're going to find out what's going on with that. Anyway, so get back to more details. Brad Owens and Jerry Torres, they have a company called Torres Advanced Enterprise Solutions, and they were pressured to stay quiet and get on the, quote, same page as the State Department with regard to the security lapses that led to the deaths of our four fellow Americans in Benghazi. And so my question is, why are they waiting so long to talk? Why didn't they do this in the hearings? Why didn't they do this, at any time? Why didn't they do this before the election? What were they waiting for? Why come out now? I mean, this is information we needed years ago, and now they're talking? I'm glad they're talking, but why are they just talking now? Let's get to some calls here. Jeremy, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. You asked earlier if somebody from the military had any information about stand-down orders, and I actually do.
Okay.
When Benghazi took place, I was actually stationed in Korea as an intelligence collector, and I was able to read some of the reports on some of the events that happened in and around Benghazi during that time. And leading up to Benghazi, Hillary Clinton at the State Department had been sent requests from the ambassador Stevens for additional security, which her office denied. Now, once the attack actually started taking place, she was uninvolved. At the time, what happened was the U.S. Army general, his name was Carter Ham, was the commander of AFRICOM, which is the African Command.
Okay.
And he actually requested what is called cross-border authority, CBA, from President Obama. Now, President Obama is the only person in the U.S. government who can grant cross-border authority. Cross-border authority is required for any and all U.S. military personnel to cross any nation's sovereign border for a military operation. So he needed cross-border authority in order to send the special forces soldiers across the Mediterranean Sea into Libya.
Mm-hmm. Was this from Italy? Was this from Italy they were stationed?
I believe that the ones that were taking off, now I'm having a hard time. It may have been actually in Sigonella, which is in Italy. Yes.
Okay. I'm thinking Aviano airfield comes to mind.
Right. And so cross-border authority was requested. Cross-border authority was denied. General Hamm persists reports that I saw with my own eyes. He was temporarily relieved of his command at that moment.
Oh.
Command transferred to his second in command, and the denial order for cross-border authority was then given to the second in command. So the special forces soldiers that were ready to take off in the Black Hawk and the Chinook helicopters stayed grounded until the event was over, at which time General Carter Hamm was reinstated as the general, the four-star commanding general of AFRICOM. And that is basically why there never was a rescue mission launched at all.
Okay, so he was relieved of his command during that operation. I'm just trying to make, sort of recap for everybody so we understand this. And so
right.
he couldn't have ordered a rescue. Now, the number two person, were they, you know, kind of, I don't know, was that the Obama yes man kind of thing? Or were they just, you know, were not independent
probably,
or what happened?
He probably wasn't an Obama yes man, but at the time, the second in command, I mean, the point had already been proven.
Okay.
That basically that they had to disobey an order from the commander in chief in order to get this off the ground, which wasn't going to happen. At that point, the point had been proven.
Here's the difficult question: at what point do you disobey? Because the guys that went in to save them, Tyrone Woods and I have to look at the other person's name. I'll get it. But they disobeyed orders.
Right. You know, part of me is surprised that the pilots didn't take off anyway.
Okay.
But there's a lot of moving pieces that go into military operations like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as quickly as special operations soldiers and the helicopter pilots can move, there's a lot of logistics that goes into carrying out orders, but likewise, there would be even more required to disobey an order and actually launch that operation, and you'd be losing some of your support that you would have necessary.
If it goes wrong, too. If it goes right, you're a hero. If it goes wrong, you disobeyed a presidential order. Now you're, what, court-martialed? I mean, it's just...
Yeah, exactly. Plus, it's very difficult to take an operation like that and lose your constant flow of information in the middle of it.
Right.
That's something that could have happened. But these reports about the cross-border authority being denied, I saw these reports with my own eyes, went back to look them up again, probably at least a year later, and they weren't there. They weren't accessible to me anymore. I had a top secret security clearance, but it can go above that. It can be scrubbed. And these weren't classified. This wasn't classified information at all, anyway.
Oh, interesting.
It was, easily accessible at that moment.
Okay. Huh. This is fascinating. I really appreciate your call. Anything else to add?
No. Actually, now that you're talking about, now that there's breaking news, I wrote everything that I just told you. I actually published everything on my own blog, and I'm going to probably go dig that up and republish it so that it can be the most recent blog entry that I've got.
Okay. Do you want to give the name of your blog? We can all take a look.
It's www.freeamericannational.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And I'll be digging that out and republishing that. But it tells all about cross-border authority, who's able to give that, how it's requested, and how it was denied in the case of the Benghazi attack.
Well, I remember that too, because that was one of the excuses the Obama administration said. Well, we don't have permission to go into Libya. We can't even overfly them, and we can't do anything. And if you're saying the cross-border authority can be done by the president, then that was a lie then.
Yeah, absolutely. He gave him the cross-border authority, just like he gave the cross-border authority that we used to destabilize and ultimately kill Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah.
He's fine with giving cross-border authority to destabilize Libya and turn it into a terrorist safe haven, but he was unwilling to give cross-border authority to our special forces soldiers on the tarmac in Sigonella to go and rescue our boys at Benghazi.
Well, this is a socialist leftist mindset. The group matters, the individual doesn't. And so this, if you look at it in terms of that, you know, this is how they people don't matter. This is why the individuals don't matter in healthcare. Individuals don't matter in all kinds of different areas. Individual hostages don't matter. How many people were held hostage during the Obama administration that never got rescued in different countries around the world, including that student who was in North Korea who only came back a week before he died?
Right. He was definitely abused, and we left him behind. You know, there's stories from ancient Rome.
Mm-hmm.
That actually say that it was safe for a Roman to walk alone in foreign lands because people knew that if you harmed a Roman, that the entire Roman Empire was going to come after you. And once upon a time,
yeah,
it was the same way for an American. Americans were looked up to. Americans were revered. Americans were respected. And it's not that way anymore, and that is not a reflection on the American people. It is a reflection on the people that we have allowed to represent us.
That goes back to the Carter administration with the Iran hostage crisis.
Yeah. Exactly.
I can let you go. We got to take a break. Right. I got another caller. Jeremy, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Here we go. All right, 848 here at 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida Talk Radio. Greg Penglis here. I'll be right back.
It's not unusual to see me cry.
We're talking about Benghazi here. I'm going over the fact that Fox News has a news story about these people who are finally telling the truth, that the information was suppressed, that they didn't talk about how incompetent these people were in the government and how they've been told to keep their mouth shut. And that's why we had no good information in the Benghazi hearings. You know, none of this stuff has come out like it should have. The people that died in Benghazi, just to recap, because I obviously didn't know I was going to be going into this in this detail, but I want to talk about this. Ambassador Chris Stevens, okay? Foreign Service Information Officer Sean Smith, and the CIA contractors Tyrone Woods and Glenn Doherty died at Benghazi. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Greg. Just so you know, Sigonello and Aviano did have assets on the flight lines ready to go. They were told to stand down.
Do you have details on that?
At the same time, there was a Marine Expeditionary Force in the Mediterranean, and I don't know if you know what assets they have, but they have fixed wing and everything, mm-hmm. and they also have special forces, and they were told to stand down also.
Wow. Now, is there any, I don't know, are these orders, do they exist somewhere? Are they classified? Are they in, does Congress have them? Do you know the status of these stand-down orders?
All I can say is from people that I served with and people I'm still in contact with after I retired, have told me this, and they couldn't believe it either.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, I don't want to reveal classified information that's going to endanger our country. On the other hand, I don't want to let people get away with issuing orders like this that allow our people to die, because that's not who we are as Americans. So I'm kind of conflicted, you know, when I ask these questions.
Well, there's the conflict. They kept saying the Italy was too far, but there was an expeditionary force in the Med that had aircraft ready to go, and they have the assets with special forces to go in and do that.
Don't we have a carrier group in the Mediterranean, or what do we
have?
Well,
an expeditionary force is usually related with a carrier group, MAGTAF.
Okay.
And the expeditionary force is usually three ships that have all the Marines and their assets. Well, you know, one's a flat top and the other are transports.
Okay.
And that's what I did. That's what I did. I worked in the Landing Force Operations Center and the Combat Information Center.
Wow.
We're ready to go at a minute's notice.
So how did you hear about that when it was going on? Were people listening to news reports? Was there intelligence coming out? And how did that whole system work, you know, once that attack started?
Well, a lot of it was hush-hush, and nobody's going to talk about it.
Oh, see, those are the best questions, though. That's why I ask, you know, because I'm just curious.
Well,
okay, that's fine. No, I understand if you can't answer it, but I mean, believe me.
Well, there was a lot of people that basically knew what was going on.
Yeah.
The troops knew what was going on, but you can't do nothing.
Yeah.
What are Marines trained for? I mean, not that we're warmongers or
no, of course not. No, but rescuing American citizens has got to be one of the top priorities of any military unit or service branch.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to pass that information on also.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye. Here we go. All right. We have the best sources out here. This is why I love living in a military area, because we get the information. We only have a little bit of time left. I think I have one more caller that wants to try and get on, but they're only going to have just a few seconds. We might try it another time. Anyway, A-Dog, you think this – we'll see what's going on. Anyway, but this is what's going on in Benghazi, and this is why I ask these questions, because, you know, and this is a conflict. I don't want to give away secrets, but I want to know. I want to know what is going on, because we need to find out, you know, where our government is screwing up. And we don't need to wait 75 years to find out, or however long security information is classified. That's not how it works. Do we have some? Okay. Anyway, so just to sum up, this story is going to grow. And the two people, like I said, that are speaking now, and they were on Tucker Carlson last night, Brad Owens and Jerry Torres, and what they said, I'll see if I can get you a quick little thing here. The bureaucrats and policies remain in the State Department after the Benghazi attack, despite the change in administrations. A U.S. ambassador is dead, and nobody's held accountable for it, and three guys all died trying to defend him. So the people that caught... And that's how it ended. It's interesting. There's not a really great transition. Usually I have music on my WEBY broadcast. That one was made September 13th of 2017, so that's 5 years old. Yeah, 5 years old. And then when I was on the station there, we had these two amazing callers call in. Well, Jeff was a regular, and the First Element I did not recognize. But there's confirmation. You got double confirmation of stand-down orders in Benghazi. So these questions don't go away. You know, this is why I replay these things. This is why I do this. Unfortunately, I think I'll mark on the show notes the transition point, because it really kind of slid into there. Unless you're listening carefully, you wouldn't know when you know, today, September 12th, you know, 2022, when this show, you know, the live part that I'm doing right now ended, and then that we slipped back 5 years because it's my voice. It's hard to tell the difference, you know, especially if you're depending on what you're listening on. But that's how it happened. Anyway, that's how it was. I think we've covered 9/11, a couple of 9/11s, Oklahoma City, TWA, Flight 800. We've got a lot of good stories in there, and all stories that don't have answers yet, which is quite interesting. All right, let's play San Rosa Peace Volunteers here. This is Anti-Federalist number 13, and that'll do it for us today. Today's been fun. This has been a great day. We were able to cover just a bunch of ground, and, of course, every day we try and do that, cover as much as possible. Michael Bobby's going to join us tomorrow with some stories of people that are wrongly convicted. Another big cause, you know, big cause around here, like family law and those things. So let me play this for you here of our founding moments back in a little bit, and that will do us for today. So thank you for listening. And again, I'll try and make in the show notes a distinction so you know when we go from the live show today, which will be podcast probably by the time most people hear it, and the show that went back 5 years when I got those stand-down orders from WEBY. All right, talk to you a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist Paper number 13 was written by our old anonymous friend, under the name A. Farmer. The paper is titled The Expense of the New Government, referring to the Constitution being considered for ratification on this date, October 17, 1787. In the first paragraph, A. Farmer complains about overpaid government bureaucrats, even from the Articles of Confederation. Regarding that, he says, "The truth is, when you carry a man's salary beyond what decency requires, he immediately becomes a man of consequence and does little or no business at all." That pretty much explains our multi-trillion dollar bureaucrat welfare establishment workforce. They knew it even before our Constitution was ratified. The second paragraph starts with a call to action. It implores all to make sure that if the Constitution is ratified by the states, it must include a Bill of Rights. Sadly, it did not until many years later. But A. Farmer and the Anti-Federalists knew that without one, the Constitution was for the government and not for the people. He says, "Rouse up, my friends. A matter of infinite importance is before you on the carpet, soon to be decided in your convention. The new Constitution. Seize the happy moment. Secure to yourselves and your posterity the jewel liberty, which has cost you so much blood and treasure by a well-regulated Bill of Rights from the encroachments of men in power. For if Congress will do these things in the dry tree when their power is small, what won't they do when they have all the resources of the United States at their command?" Well, we all know what they would do. They would create a coup to steal the government and rule by the tyranny of mandates, none of which are legal, and all of which constitute the very insurrection they blame on the true government and those who support it. A. Farmer continues by describing the proper place of bureaucrats in relationship to the people in terms of what this paper is all about, that being the expense of government, in this case, people who work in it. He says, "They are the servants of the public. You have an undoubted right to set their wages, or at least to say, thus far, you and those under you may go and no further. This would, in the end, ease Congress of a great deal of trouble, as it would put a stop to the impertinence of individuals in asking large salaries." You can usually tell the evil or folly of a government program or law by how quickly the supporters want it passed, implemented, or in the case of the Constitution, ratified. The Federalists are always in such a hurry, spending much time on the urgency of ratifying the Constitution before the states all break into factions or various nations of Europe declare war on us. Both were fiction, but they served a purpose, much as the propagandized creation of the fear of COVID, which is as always to increase government power and control. A. Farmer says of this artificial urgency, "My friends and countrymen, let us pause for a moment and consider. We are not driven to such great straits as to be obliged to swallow down every potion offered us by wholesale or else die immediately by our disease. We can form a constitution at our leisure and guard and secure it on all sides. We are paying off our state debt and the interest on the domestic as fast as Congress call upon us for it. As to the foreign debt, they have the promise of more interest from us than they can get anywhere else, and we shall be able to pay them both interest and principal shortly. But it is said they win declare war against us if we don't pay them immediately. Common sense will teach them better. We live at too great a distance and are too hardy and robust a people for them to make money out of us in that way." A. Farmer then describes various economic classes, from merchants to soldiers to government folks who want public debt and paper money abolished, but whatever the economic consequences or benefits, this still remains the fundamental problem that the Constitution by itself fails to guard our liberty by prohibiting government from enacting certain laws, regulations, policies, or practices. A. Farmer says, "But in neither of these cases do I wish to see it adopted without being guarded on all sides with a Magna Carta or a Bill of Rights as a bulwark to our liberties." So the economic consequences of funding the government, its officers, the national debt, and interest are subordinate to the essential component of a bulwark to our liberties. And of that, the Federalists have not spoken to this point. A. Farmer continues. He says, regarding the Constitution, "But we need not be in a hurry about it. Consider, my friends, you are the persons who must live and die by this Constitution. A merchant or mechanic may dispose of his goods or pack them up in trunks and remove it to another clime in the course of a few months. But you cannot shoulder your lands or dispose of them when you please. It therefore behooves you to rouse up and turn your most serious and critical attention to this Constitution. So ends part one. In part two, a farmer issues a warning to his fellow citizens, which is also a precursor to the tyranny of the deep state and their stolen government has imposed on this country by a coup d'etat. A farmer says, "A large representation has ever been esteemed by the best Whigs in Great Britain, the best barrier against bribery and corruption. And yet we find a British king having the disposition of all places, civil and military, and an immense revenue squeezed out of the very mouths of his wretched subjects. He is able to corrupt the Parliament, devote him any supplies he demands, to support armies, to defend the prerogatives of his crown, and carry fire and sword by his fleets and armies, to desolate whole provinces in the eastern world, to aggrandize himself and satisfy the avarice of his tyrannical subjects. Replace King with Brandon, and our plight will be accurately reflected in the history books." The next paragraph is so good, I just have to read it. A farmer says, "No wonder our American ambassador, John Adams, struck with the brilliancy of the British court, where everything around St. James wears the appearance of wealth, ease, and plenty, should imagine a three-branch legislature only can produce these effects and make the subjects happy, should write a book in favor of such a government and send it over for the illumination of this Western world. If this is the sole fruit of his embassy, America will not canonize him for a saint on account of his services, when they have experienced the consequences of such a kind of government as he has planned out. In order to have formed the right judgment, he should have looked into the ditches which serve for graves for many of the human race, under hedges which serve as dreary habitations for the living, into the cottages of the poor and miserable, and critically examine with how much parsimony the mechanics, the day laborers, cottagers, and villagers live in order to support their high pampered lords, before he had wrote a book to persuade his country to pursue the same road to greatness, splendor, and glory, and have reflected in his own mind whether he could wish to see that country which gave him birth reduced to the same situation." And here we are today. In conclusion, A. Farmer submits the question of whether it makes sense to rush into ratifying this Constitution before all the details have been spelled out. I agree, which is why Action Radio is sponsoring a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Just one of many proposed overhauls planned to make the Constitution live up to its promise of limited government and no public debt. A. Farmer says, "Now I submit it to the good sense of the people of these states, whether it is prudent we should make so liberal and extensive a grant of power and property to any body of men in these United States before they have ever informed the public the amount of the public debt, or what the annual expenses of the federal government is or will be." The source for the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. See all the fun we have here? What a great day. I had so much fun today, I can't tell you. All right, so check out the notes. I'll make that big distinction between our broadcast from 5 years ago on WEBY, and the one I just made today, so you can tell the difference. But yeah, it's pretty obvious once the callers come in that that was the 5 years ago portion. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock a.m. Standard Time, Central Standard Time, with another exciting show, more guests. Michael Bobby will be joining us, and who knows what else will happen. I never know. That's the fun of this. I never know exactly what's going to happen. That's what makes it fun. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed.